added agenda items?
I would like to add this matter regarding the cocoa use and another matter regarding HB 3347.
What is the second item?
HB 3347?
Yes.
And there's one expense voucher added to the consent agenda. Any others? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to accept the consent agenda.
That's all you.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Oh, sorry. A little sore on my feet here. I do have an item in the minutes.
Okay.
Okay, this would be the minutes for February 9th, 2011. Page 6. Item 13. There was also, what I'd like to add is council agreed that this was an important step in planning the budget. And that was about the discussion about the goal setting session. And then the second thing is, on the same page, item 12, this is regarding the city manager's contract. And I would like to add the outcome of the executive session was a decision to renew the city manager's contract.
Any other comments?
No, that's it.
I'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes for February 2011 as amended.
With me?
Yes.
First.
Second.
Motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Do we have a list of anybody that wanted to speak at public comment? Is there anyone who wants to speak at this is public comment time.
I would, just a minute.
Yes, please.
You want me to speak up to...
Why not? There's a full house.
Judge Shorter, 15640 Cornell Drive, Lapine. This comment just came to me as I was sitting here waiting for the meeting to start and hearing all of the activity and hubbub and the noise going on in this room. This, I want to compliment the council, mayor, and our public servants here, and the community on moving so far forward and taking giant steps and leaps this year in becoming a city, and the enthusiasm of the community in that process. I really want to commend all of you. Thanks.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
Any other public comments at this time? Because there will be a period at the toward the end. Can you hear me? Okay. There'll be another opportunity for public comments. Resolution number 201101, approval of financial agreement for new city hall.
I must have the wrong.
I have
it.
The next name is
I have the wrong name.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. to look down to see if it's somewhere else.
We've no child population. I know I did that because I just want to make sure everybody's aware. Week of Young Child Proclamation.
Right there.
Would you like me to do that?
Thank you. I'm Laurel Case. I'm from Healthy Beginnings. And I've got here with me some packets of information for the council about Healthy Beginnings. So if you can have one of those. Thank you. So, in case you aren't aware, Healthy Beginnings is a local nonprofit providing no-cost health and developmental screenings for young children ages 0 through 5 in Deschutes County. We're also a grantee of the state for the Healthy Kids Program, working to ensure that all children have access to the health care that they need. Every year, we come to represent a community collaboration of organizations, and we ask your city council to approve the Week of the Young Child Proclamation. The Week of the Young Child is an annual celebration sponsored by the National Association for the Education of Young Children. This year's Week of the Young Child is from April 10th until April 16th. We'll be focusing on public attention on the needs of young children and recognizing those early childhood programs and services that are meeting those needs. Our theme this year is Early Years Are Learning Years. And at this time, as well, the governor of the state of Oregon has recognized early childhood as a priority for our state, which underscores its importance. The community of Lapine represents for us at Healthy Beginnings a very great challenge and also a top priority. So we would welcome any ideas, suggestions, collaborations, assistance, support, anything that you can offer in helping us to reach the young children that you have here, making sure that they are ready for a bright future. At this time, would you like to read the proclamation, sir?
Sure. Before the City Council of Lapine, Oregon, a proclamation declaring April the 10th through 16th, 2011, Week of the Young Child. Proclamation, whereas Healthy Beginnings, Deschutes County Commission on Children and Families, partnershiping with young children, for young children and other local organizations in conjunction with the National Association for Education and Young Children, are celebrating the Week of the Young Child, April the 10th through the 16th, and whereas, by calling attention to the need for high-quality early childhood services for all children and families within our community and state, these groups hope to improve the quality and availability of such services and, whereas, public policies that support early learning for all young children are crucial to young children's futures, whereas the future of our community and our state depends on the quality of the early childhood experiences provided to young children today, and whereas high-quality early childhood services represent a worthy commitment to our children's future, therefore be it resolved that the City Council of Pine, Oregon, hereby proclaims April 10th through 16th as the Week of the Young Child. The City Council of Pine hereby urges all citizens during this week and throughout the month of April to recognize and support the needs of young children in our community. Dated this ninth day of March, 2011, by the City Council of Lapine, condolences. I would entertain a motion at this time to issue this proclamation.
I so move.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? The proclamation is so here issued.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Do you want to sign that and make a copy of her date?
Yes.
That'd be cool.
We'll all sign it. Yeah. We'll all sign it. All you guys. Give it to you.
Thank you, Laurel, for the input.
Mm-hmm.
presentation from the Deschutes Water Alliance. Our county commissioner, Mayor Wonder.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you for coming.
I do have a PowerPoint, but I printed it out for you. I only did 10 copies. I had no idea that it was going to be this many people here. I don't see this many people in hardly any meetings. And so I applaud you for all coming and having interest in your local government and participating. Yes, my name is Alan Unger. I'm a county commissioner. I'm also chair of the Deschutes Water Alliance. Back in the mid-2000s, 2004, there was federal authorization to create the Deschutes River Conservancy and one to start studying the Deschutes Basin. Well, a group was formed of the irrigation districts, the city, Central Oregon Cities Organization, and the tribes to really start doing this work. And they basically created a bunch of studies, and I have a couple copies of them here that you can look through. And then they presented them at Kenita at a water summit. Well, when they did that, they realized they had no elected officials at there, so they had really no mechanism to really carry forward with planning in the Deschutes Basin. And if you look at your PowerPoint, or the next slide shows you the size of the Deschutes Basin. It is the second largest water basin in the state. It stretches from south of you all the way down to the Columbia. 10,000 square miles. And if you change the page, you'll see that it has an interesting aquifer. We learned from those studies that the groundwater and the surface water are connected. The groundwater starts absorbing into this porous lava we have underneath the Deschutes River, formed by all these lava flows out of the Newberry Crater and other places. It recharges with water that comes off the mountains. You notice there aren't very many creeks or anything coming off the Cascades, just a couple. And so the water mostly absorbs into the ground. It starts up here, and as it heads into Bend, it hits lava tubes at Pringle Falls. A tremendous amount of water goes underground. And it starts hitting from 4,000 feet up here down to Lake Billy Chinook, which is about 2,000 feet, and it starts popping up out of the ground. You've got Opal Springs, you've got the Metolius River, and because our aquifer is, and you see how thick it is, because the water table is basically 500 feet below Redmond and Bend. So there's thousands of feet of water underneath us. We are so fortunate in Central Oregon to have such a clean water supply underneath us. So, if you turn the page, you'll see that basically it's a picture of snow in the mountains, 130 inches today. I talked to Kyle Gorman. He said we're at 100% now, which is great for us to have. It was kind of a worry in the last few months, but who knows? The way the weather is around here, it used to snow in November, and now it just seems to snow in February and March. So, poor ski resorts, they just don't have as good a time. You look at the next page, you'll see that there are irrigation districts. Back in the 1900s, irrigation districts were formed. They basically dewatered the Deschutes River. And they did it at Bend. They created Wickiup Reservoir, and they created Crane Prairie, stored the water in the winter, and then they watered the desert out here through the summer. And that's what brought the people here to Central Oregon as well as the railroad. So basically the water flowed down to Bend, all the diversions happened there, and they carried water all the way down to Jefferson County and into the farms there, which is really the fertile growing area of Central Oregon. And they did it that way because it was natural flow and it worked. But the problem is that we have such a porous ground that it takes 8 acres of water to get 1 acre of water to the field, basically around the Redmond area. Turn to the next page, and you'll see that it shows you kind of the blue whale, which is kind of something we joke about. But the top line shows you the natural flow, how water flowed before 1900. And then the middle picture shows you the summer flow. That's where the water's flowing down the Bend, and then the middle Deschutes from Bend to basically Lake Billy Chinook is basically just water. Dewatered. And if it wasn't for a gentleman's agreement back in the last few decades to make sure there was water in the river, there just wouldn't have been any. And then at the bottom shows you what happens in the wintertime. They basically hold the water back at Wickiup and fill up the reservoirs. And if you take a look at the next page, you'll see that's what the river looks like down around Bend when they pull the water out in the winter time. And then if you turn to the next page, you'll see what it also looks like. Actually, that was the summertime in the middle of work. And now this is what it looks like below Wickiup, which is a real challenge for Bend because there's not enough flow up at Wickiup. It creates a situation where the ground freezes, and then when the water flows again, it carries all that sediment down into Muir Pond in the middle of Bend, which is filling up. And it didn't used to, because there used to be a log pond by the mills just upstream from there, and the sediment flowed into there instead. But now we're having that issue with Muir Pond. So, back in the 1990s, the city's got a real wake-up call. The Water Resource Department basically said, you know, there's the Lola River from Magic to the Columbia is a protected species river with salmon and steelhead and a scenic waterway. There's actually four federal laws we got to work through, whether it's the Scenic Waterway, the Clean Water Act, and there's a couple others, and I always forget which ones they are, but they really drive what we can do here. And they said, we're going to put a cap on the amount of water that you can take out of the ground, because cities of Bend and Redmond were growing, and they were going for more well applications to pull more water out of the ground. And they said, the groundwater and the surface water is connected. It connects at Lake Bill and Chinook. If you're going to take water out of the ground, you got to put water into the river. So the cities went to the legislature and to the Water Resource Department, and they said, you know, we got to find mitigation tools to allow us to work through the water laws to do that. So they did. They went through the legislature. They've got laws there, which we are going back this year to say they have a sunset on them. We'd like the sunset to go away and have those water mitigation rules to be permanent. And Central Oregon Cities is leading the charge on that in the legislature right now. I don't know if you were back in Salem the other day, Mayor Rulovex, to work through that. But that's where we are with that. Well, recently we decided we need to start developing a plan for the Deschutes Basin. So I knew that as a mayor. I just didn't have time, because you're all volunteers and you have to decide where you spend your time, and doing these extra projects is too hard. But as a county commissioner, I'm paid, I have time. So I started leading the charge of developing the Deschutes Water Alliance again. And our goal is to find water for agriculture, streams, cities, and rural development. So that's what our charge is. If you turn to the next page, you'll see that agriculture is really where the water is. The water owned out of the Deschutes is in agriculture. Very little goes to other places. And if you turn to the next page, you'll see that the diversions are minimizing, and the amount that municipalities take is very low. It's really not the problem, although people look at it for the solutions, because cities are where you can get money. The next page shows us where we would like to go with water in 2025. So what we're looking at is, what are we going to do to put water back into the river, to have enough water for agriculture, to have enough water for municipal? And this was written when resorts were a bigger deal. They aren't so much now, so that 9% for resorts probably will be absorbed by the other graphs and have it be less. What are we going to do? Turn to the next page. We're going to use conservation. What's conservation means? That really means piping our canals around Bend, because that's where most of the loss is, so that we have conserved water. That conserved water will then flow back into the river to help flow the river. Reservoir management. We need to flow the water out of the reservoirs at the right time, so that there's more water coming out of Wickiup in the wintertime, to not have that problem of low water there, and that there's water that flows in the river at the correct times. We're going to use leasing and water transfers through the water bank, and I have a few little brochures about the water bank. So what we're basically thinking, if we do this, we can free up 260,000 acre feet of water that we can then, with a water plan, figure out where it goes. So the idea is that the Deschutes Water Basin, for the Deschutes Water Alliance, is made up of all the cities in Central Oregon, the counties, the tribes, And also the principal people, those are all, and the water districts, those irrigation districts, because they all have an interest in the water, in the flow, and the ownership of the water. We're also bringing on the Deschutes, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Bureau of Reclamation, the Department of Environmental Quality, and the Water Resource Department to help us sit down around the table and work out a water plan. So what we've been doing in this last year, 2 years ago we started this, it took a year to get a memorandum of understanding together that you have seen. We have it so that it is basically doesn't ask you anything except to participate. And what we're going to get at the end basically is a consensus-driven plan that we all can agree on. And so what we've been working on this last year is trying to get a Bureau of Reclamation grant to kind of help us with the restudying, the studies we had, and to start some scenarios on the planning. Well, the Bureau of Reclamation was very difficult to work with. They wanted to have local match. We were going to give it to them with our time. Then they wanted some money because they're going through budget times, and it can't be federal money. It's got to be local money. And we just basically the other day threw our hands up and said, well, thank you very much, but we'll move on. So we are looking at other ways to kind of move forward with this plan. But we have brought it to all the different cities, and if you notice the signing chart that I have that was probably in your packet, we basically have buy-in from all the irrigation districts except Tumalo Irrigation District. They just don't want to, they're going to watch us, but they're not going to want to commit to anything. All the cities, all the counties, and the tribes. So what I'm coming to you today for is to say, here's what we're doing. Come to the table with us. Tell us what your needs are in water, because you will need to have more water in the future, and we need to find mitigation for that. You need to give us our plan so we can put it into the basin plan. And then participate and help us come to create this Deschutes Water Basin Plan. And it's really about flow. We're not really as concerned about the other issues of riparian and environmental. Those are all important. But if you've got more water flowing in the river, you're going to have better fish habitat. You're going to have better everything. That's the thing we're going to try to really fix, because the irrigation districts have the water. We need to keep them whole and find water for the cities and the other needs in the river too. Any questions? And I apologize if I talk too much.
Alan, on the, I was just noticing on the chart, you know, the percentages for ag went from the majority to kind of the minority in this demand. Now, is that...
They will still keep the water they have.
So it's the same volume of water, but it's just making sure it's not lost somewhere.
Right. If we pipe all that water that was going in the ground, that 8 acres of water to get 1 acre to the field is now water that's in that 260,000 acre feet. It is water that we were losing that we can now do something with. And most of it's going into the river because we have a huge need to meet to create the river flow. And because the surface and groundwater are connected, we still have to make sure that the flow is getting down to Madras and onto the Columbia River.
So my concern about that is, and I think Tumalo Irrigation is concerned too, that when you don't let that water get back into the ground, then you're going to have a lot of individuals out there potentially with wells going dry or dropping or that kind of thing, because that since the 1930s that water has been seeping out, and people have developed and built homes and established. And then how do you compensate, or what about those folks who are used to getting water but won't have water if you don't allow it to
Well, there's still a lot of aquifer recharge happening. You notice there's all that water coming off the Cascades that pretty much is going right into the ground. The lavatubes are still recharging. A lot of water as it reaches, the river reaches bend. But you're right, the canals did a lot of aquifer recharge in themselves, and those people who drilled 60-foot wells are going to need to drill deeper wells because there is water underneath them. They just have to go further down. And that's probably part of the water plan, is how we deal with that issue that people have. And I can't give you a better answer than yes, I understand it, and yes, we need to think about it.
When I was looking through this MOU, I had a question on, what I didn't see is, what is the mechanism or the language that binds the cities to the policies that this group is going to, come up?
Well, there really isn't any. We aren't going to bind anybody to anything. What we want to do is put a plan together that's consensus-driven that we all agree to, and then the cities and the irrigation districts and the counties and the tribes will all implement it however they need to. And to be quite honest with you, I'm not sure what that is, but we will get there, through developing the plan. But we couldn't get the irrigation districts on board if we were going to bind them to anything. They got the water. They don't really need to come to the table, except that they do have issues. As we move forward into the future, they're going to have more. With the introduction of salmon and steelhead in Mackay Creek and in Righteous Creek, all of a sudden they had to deal with how do they maintain habitats in those rivers and creeks that they have taken water out of. And so a habitat conservation plan was required by the federal government. And so they know that there are issues that they have to deal with. And so we're all working together to figure them out.
So you're just looking for MOU to bring everyone to the table, to open up discussion, and solve everyone's problems.
Well, that's what we're going to, a big right. picture vision is.
Yes.
Yeah, and I don't know if we'll get there, but I think we need to try. Mm-hmm. And to have everybody at the table means that we're going to be able to deal with everybody's issues. And so I guess what I'm coming here tonight is to tell you to formally join us and accept the MOU. You can back out of it. The language in a basic form doesn't require you or tie you up into doing anything, but it gives you an opportunity to really look at solving any water problems you would have in the future.
And if we're not at the table, you can't complain.
You can't. Well, you can, but we're not listening.
Exactly. So, sounds good to me.
I think we're going to be more interested in water. As we assume the water district, and they've had a little struggle getting water rights, and I know that District River Conservancy Board, I'm an original, there's like 8 of us left, I think, and Alan and these guys came along and said, well, there's no one that really represents the cities and the irrigation district. You're right, there was no elected officials, particularly on the District River Conservancy. And irrigation districts do consume the water, and the Bend and Redmond in particular feel like they can't hardly get a gallon of water without, it was a tough deal. Yet there's the river's got tons of water, and there's a lot of water underneath us. It's really who's got the key to water. I look at the Central Oregon water issue as you basically got a big, huge reservoir, like you said, it's deep under us. It's who has the key to get it. You could literally die of thirst just because you don't have the key to get the water. The water is there. And you're competing with fish, the tribes, irrigation districts. So the cities need to be at the table to get the share that we need in the future. So it's kind of a spin off of the Chute River Conservancy, and they work close with them. And Alan serves on that board too. So it's a great deal. We actually approved this when I first came here, but then they were doing some more changing. They rewrote it. And
oh, several times.
Yeah.
Anybody had an issue, we tried to rewrite it to them.
And so I asked the water district today when I was over there about it, and they said they were kind of waiting for us. If we sign, I think they will sign. So
I was kind of thinking we would just sort of white out their name because it wouldn't be.
Are there any further input before we move to approve? Oh, yeah. Hearing none, I would entertain a motion that we as the City of Lapine approve the MOU as presented to us.
I so move.
Do we
want
to amend that motion for legal review, or?
I don't think anybody else particularly did, but you could.
I
there's 25 other signatures on there. We'll be a pretty
pretty simple.
Proportional piece to the puzzle.
Do we...
I do remember last time there was issues, but I guess those were all resolved.
I don't know what the issues were.
I think the issues was on the, they were on how it was going to get funded.
Well, we're still trying to deal with that, but we're not asking anybody in for any money now, although we had a meeting today and Mayor Ropey from Prineville said, we got to ask everybody for some money. And because we got to get some staff sort of working on, you know, it takes capacity to do these kind of things. Well, and then everybody else said, you're not going to get any until you give a budget and all that. So basically in the future, we will ask, but it'll be a voluntary ask.
Okay.
I didn't see anything in there.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Cheers and aye.
There's the signing sheet. That's the original. I'm going to put that in a frame.
Yeah.
I mean, to get all these people together in one room is really kind of a lot.
$400,000 behind your name.
So you're going to be the one going to the meeting, deciding the voting member.
Name of elected official. Name of board member.
Where do you put your name on there?
I think we want an alternate.
Alternate.
Yeah.
That way you make sure that someone's always at the table.
You want to go?
Yeah.
Didn't we...
I got to look after the little guy.
Didn't we address this and the issue was we were going to bring some information back? One of us, Del?
Yeah, I brought Ellen Unger back.
I compliment you on a job well done.
And you can choose, you can change people anytime.
Okay, so Dan, I'm going to put your name here as the alderman. Is that, unless somebody else?
Fine with me.
And I do want to say I appreciate Councilor Greiner coming to our Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council meetings. It's a long drive up in Redmond to go to those, and I appreciate you coming here. You have the best track record of anybody showing up at those meetings.
Okay, right. I didn't have a report written out for tonight.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. We'll go to item 10 on the agenda is the zoning ordinance overview, and that would be Deborah McMahon and James Lewis.
Good evening. As your land use representatives for the City of Lapine, we're managing the grant for developing a variety of ordinances. And in your packet tonight, you'll see, as soon as I can see, several things that we've prepared for you. And we just want to introduce the topics. We understand that this kind of project deserves a work session, and you'll probably want to do that before we schedule public hearings. As you know, the work on these ordinances has been focused on by our Planning Commission, and they have prepared the documents that are in front of you tonight with their recommendation for you to review these. They've also completed a variety of TAC meetings and public hearings, taking testimony from citizens in Lapine and from different agencies to make sure that we get good comments as we complete the following ordinances. And I'm just going to list them for you. We have put together hard copies for Patty to distribute to the council. We've also sent you electronic versions, which will be put on the website as well if they're not there already. The first ordinance is the procedures ordinance, and in terms of land use, it's kind of the recipe book of how you set up your hearings, how you process applications, how you deal with public requests for various things.
Deborah, are they inside this, these boxes?
They are.
Did you not want them to have?
Well, together they're all that big.
Right.
So,
we figured Patty should turn those down.
Yeah.
I didn't think you had enough time on your agenda to do that.
No, we don't.
But I'm just going to go start and the second ordinance is the land division ordinance, just like it says. It's how you shape land within your community, how you split lots, how you combine lots, and what you do to manage subdivisions. The third ordinance is the big one. That's your zoning ordinance. And it describes what can go on in each of the zones that we talked about through the comprehensive planning process. So for residential, commercial, industrial, parks, all of those different types of zones and public facility zones, there'll be listed uses and non-permitted uses. The outdoor lighting ordinance is something that the grant focused on as a way to look at growth in the community and preserving the night sky at the same time. And so that ordinance looks at how you regulate outdoor lighting. The sign ordinance regulates signage for individual properties. And one of the things that was very important to the Planning Commission was looking at how we could ease in regulation that helps remove some of the signs that seem to be cluttering the community and maybe don't have permits now. An important feature on the sign ordinance discussion was, how do you ease in those regulations? How do you make it reasonable for citizens, particularly since the current sign ordinance, which is the Deschutes County ordinance, really hasn't been enforced all that long. Sorry, Ellen. And then our last ordinance is SDC mitigation framework. Systems development charges are impact fees. And the sewer and water districts charge impact fees for people who want to develop within Lapine. Other impact fees have to do with transportation. And so this particular ordinance sets up a framework for how you would impose a systems development charge and how it would be run through the community. You'll see in your packet and on the website a basic framework on how you could charge SDCs. The most interesting thing that is on your plate this year to complete your SDC analysis is to get the transportation system plan up and going. And Rick and I are working on getting that RFP out, and we hope to have that project done this year. As you know, the transportation system plan includes a capital improvements program describing all of the different projects that will be included for a street program over 20 years, and then that creates your systems development charge. So, in a nutshell, that's a real small discussion of the six ordinances that are before you. And I think probably the best thing to do is, if the council would like to discuss when is a good time to have that work session, and then, of course, we will do the appropriate notices for upcoming hearings.
If I could speak to this work session, I think we need to do it as an individual. I mean, we can see the size of the package, the list of the ordinances, and I would recommend to the counselors that we look at a time when we can do that as a work session by itself.
What do you want these? When do you need to have the hearings?
What I thought I would do is send out, a schedule for you to look at, backing up the final date that we need to have approved by the grant, and then that'll give you kind of a window of when you can have work sessions and hearings.
Okay, yeah, that's what you need to do. Give us that and give it to me first. Are you talking May? Are you talking April? Are you talking a week from now? What?
We would like to have everything adopted by the first part of June. The first part of June.
Okay.
So do it sooner, great.
Yeah. So you definitely need to because like we've got two extra budget meetings or separate nights in May. So yeah, it gets very crowded, and I'm sure that you guys aren't going to want to meet three times a week. You can't. You've got other things plus committees and everything. So we get crowded. So definitely get that to me so we can coordinate around the budget meetings our regular meetings, our committee meetings, and then trying to throw in, how many meetings is this for the council?
I would say a work session and then go directly to the public hearings where you'll have extra time to review anything you didn't get in the work session.
Public hearings?
Yes. Depending on the number of citizen comments you get at your first hearing, you may need to extend the hearing.
Okay.
And I don't think you're going to need more than two. Your planning commission did a vast amount of the work.
So we'll figure on a couple hearings in extra meetings.
Yeah.
Okay. These are not with planning commission either. These are just here.
Yeah, just at the city council. Because planning commission is forwarding their recommendation to you.
With the comp plan only partially approved, and the comp plan, these are going to be done ahead of the comp plan. How does that work if you have a zoning ordinance but no comp plan?
It's possible that they would all come together at the same time. And one of the things in the grant was specific to the completion of the adoption of the comprehensive plan. Last week, the state of Oregon partially acknowledged our plan, which is a good thing, and said there's more information needed on a variety of goals, mostly having to do with housing and the placement of UGB. So we have that work to do as well. Most of that is completed, and you'll see references to some of the LCDC comments in the drafts of the zoning ordinances, because that is one thing that they mentioned. We need a river setback, things like that. And we hope to have all of that done by June as well.
What if the member, because you and I went through this, if the you're going to have it submitted by the end of June, that I know. That I know for various reasons. But that doesn't mean they have it approved. In other words, we can send that DLCD in their system and they could spend 2 or 3 months with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's possible.
So that's what I'm wanting to know is if we adopt a zoning ordinance in May, do they in fact come effective then, or are they not effective until the DLCD is done with the entire comp plan?
That's an excellent question. The two work hand in hand. Your zoning ordinances implement the comprehensive plan. If you don't have the comp plan fully adopted, obviously it wouldn't be prudent to implement your ordinances. But again, we're also working with the county on when we have a handover of jurisdictional responsibility. The council hasn't had that discussion yet. So what will likely happen is your ordinances and comp plan will be approved. When they're actually effective in managing growth and development in the community is another discussion point that will probably culminate in a revision to your intergovernmental management agreement. And so you may have your comp plan approved, you may have your ordinances approved, but then we won't want those effective until the county's on board with the transition of authority to the city.
Well, we'll get a couple of meetings scheduled with the timeline you give me, and we'll figure that out, and then I'll run it out to the council on some dates that work for you guys, and you let us know. So we'll figure out doing that in late April, 1st of May, or somewhere in there. Because our budget meetings are starting like the last part of May, so we could do them in the first part.
Okay. And I'll also put in the state-regulated 45-day notice timeline, because that's something we can't avoid or mess around with too much.
They have to have 45 days before the hearing?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
so that narrows things down.
Well, you got all of April, there's your 30, so then we can add a couple weeks into March, so there's your 45, we better be on it. You know, how about the council? You know, we do meet on the 4th or the 11th and the 25th in May. Do you mind if we met on the other two Wednesdays?
I think
so. It's just always on Wednesday?
You need to check.
Because we've got our budget meetings, we threw on a couple Tuesdays. But you know that every other Wednesday will be open. You're used to being here on Wednesdays.
Well, I'll send out some samples that you guys can pick through and see what works.
I think it's true. I would be in favor of the Wednesdays because it just sets
the mood. May 4th is the first Wednesday. You know, we would, I'm assuming. Do we have anything on May 4th?
No, but the third Wednesday of every month is the Planning Commission meeting.
Yeah, but they start in
4:30.
Yeah, they're done.
Starting time is 6.
Oh.
And we'll want to make headway in April, too, just because it's important to...
Anyway, yeah, the Planning Commission could be here just to hear the testimony. I mean, right. Since Planning Commission, actually, these are part of their product, we don't have any... It would be nice to say we have nothing that they're acting on that's being built. And, you know, we're still in this in-between stage. So if the Planning Commission had to miss a regular meeting so that we can get something that they can use to plan from, probably would be a good use of our time.
And they probably want to be here, too.
They want to be here anyway.
Help for continuity. So
but the 4th and the 18th would be the two.
Of May?
Yeah, that's... Because you got to do 45 days. I mean, just saying, that means the 15th of March, you got to put a notice out, basically, to get your 45 days. Well, today's the 9th, so we just don't have a lot of time to go back and forth on dates. Mm-hmm. If we're going to get this done in May.
Your flexibility is with your work sessions, not so much with your hearings.
And we're just going to follow up with verifying that and scheduling.
May 4th, right now, if everyone's okay with that, is a tentative for our work session.
Work session?
Well, you want that ahead of that.
I need that in April.
So are we saying we'll have two hearings plus a work session?
You'll have a work session, one hearing, and then if we need to continue that hearing because of public testimony.
Okay. So the 4th and 18th would be our hearings. Okay, do we need a notice? The work session does not require the 45-day issue.
No, it does not.
Okay, now we're into April. How about April 20th?
I think there's an issue here with the council that we need to really look at our schedules.
Okay.
And I'll ship something out for you to look at first and send off to you.
But I think a date through email or something could be determined.
Yeah.
Once we get back to our calendars. Okay.
Yep, thanks. Thank you. Good job. Good job of all of this.
Thank you very much.
And I've asked thank you. And I've asked the state of Oregon to revise their grant terminology. There was some ambiguity about what is required before the end of the cycle. Is it a final adopted draft or is it camera ready to be adopted, which would give you more time? So I'm trying to get us a little more time.
When I brought that up to the LCDC senior staff when we were in Salem last week, the problem is that our grant deadline is June 30th. And that's how we decided to pay us our grant. And so, and I said it on the record to the commission, in fact. I said, now wait a second, if you're only going to partially adopt this, one of the issues is the dates and the grant, and I told them we were a small town and, you know, it cost us a lot of money to continue on all this. And then I talked to the deputy director and all those guys out in the hall afterwards, so they know.
And we gave them extra time.
That's right.
So they should be flexible with us.
Yep. Their problem is, under Oregon law, June 30th, that's last year's budget, and it's just all that money is swept back into the general fund. There is no system, if you've got 10 grand left coming to Lapine, that rolls it to July 1. Anything left on June 30th is gone. And so then we have to, you know, if we're short 10 grand, they got to then somehow allocate it in the next year's budget. So it's more complicated than meets the eye.
All work products have to be done by June 30th. What those work products are, whether it's full adoption on all levels, is something we're trying to get a little more flexibility on now.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Presentation by HSR Architects regarding the new City Hall.
I think you can see you need a new chambers.
Yes.
Do you need room,
Steve? Yeah. Let me give Alan.
Yes.
Okay. Hi, my name is Leslie Harashik, and I'm with HSR Master Planning and Architecture, and we are in Bend, Oregon. And this is John Ralston, and he's my partner at HSR. And we did a study, the feasibility study, for your proposed new City Hall. So John's going to review the findings of what we studied for your City Hall and the conclusions. And then we have a cost estimate that I'll review, and then plans. And we didn't count, again, like Alan, we didn't count on as many people, but we do have plans in the city council books for you guys to pull out and follow along when we get to that part of it. So, John?
Thank you. So, we put together a booklet here that the council has copies of. And rather than go through it page by page and boring everybody, we'll just kind of hit the highlights and the conclusions and findings of what we were asked to do. Basically, as you know, you're looking at the old REMAX building across the street. We all know where that is. It was built in 2005. It's fairly new. It has a total of about 5,000 square feet, about 3,400 on the first floor. 1,000 of that is leased out to Edward Jones currently for the next two more years. And that leaves about 2,400 square feet for you guys to use now. There's a second floor of about 1,700 square feet, and that's accessed by one stair. You have 22 existing parking places, and you have some overflow parking that's currently gravel down on the south end. The building potential is very, very good. The ground floor, the south part and the central portion are just fine for what you guys need to do right now, which is about 2,400 square feet. You've got Edward Jones at about 1,200, which down the road can become an expansive space for you guys to move into. And as you say, they're out in 2 years. One of the issues is that of an elevator that we were asked to look at, being a Title II building as a government facility. If this were a new building, you'd be required to put in an elevator right off the bat, no questions asked. Because it's an existing building, there's some ways we can get around that. And at this time, we've worked with the building department of Deschutes County, who have been really great for us to work with. And we don't feel that at this time we need to do an elevator. And we also feel that you can use the two offices on the second floor. You can't use the rest of it yet. You have to just use that for storage now. Down the road, long-term growth, you move into that area, and then you put in an elevator, second stair, that sort of things. The reason why we don't need it is because we will have what we call reasonable accommodation on the ground floor. If someone from the public comes in who is disabled for a meeting, there's a conference room downstairs they can meet at. If whoever's occupying the offices on the second floor becomes disabled, there's spare offices downstairs for them to use. So going to the expense of anywhere from $60,000 to $125,000 for an elevator now doesn't really seem reasonable. Also, codes require that you spend up to 25% of your construction budget on ADA upgrades. And an elevator in this case would be quite a bit beyond that. And we do have plans that long-range growth where we do put an elevator in when you occupy the whole second floor, but that's quite a ways down the road for you guys and what you need right now, which is a new chambers. One thing though, that we do need to make you aware of is that sometimes there are groups and individuals that will challenge what I've just said about the elevator. Worst case scenario, you just move those offices downstairs and there's enough room for them for now. Council chambers, we'll let Leslie talk about that a little bit later, but the south portion of the building will make for a great council chambers, easily twice to three times the size, I think. Toilet facilities, in order to accommodate the new council chambers, we're going to have to take out one toilet. That leaves two existing toilets in the central portion of the building. We've provided an argument with Deschutes County building officials that they have accepted that that will be adequate at this time. That's another reason you can't have more offices upstairs. With the two that are up there, and with what's downstairs, and with the chambers, you're maxed out on using those two bathrooms. Accessibility inside the building. It was built in 2005, so it's really pretty darn good. There's not a whole lot that you need to do. Minor things such as the counter and sink in one of the offices doesn't meet ADA. The stair treads and nosing are slightly off. Handrails on the stairs do not meet. Those we would anticipate replacing. Simple things like the fire extinguishers aren't quite to code. Overall, the inside is very good. Outside, again, it's fairly recent. You've got some spalling and cracks in the concrete that compose a hazard. We're recommending that we replace some of the walkways. Some of the door sills have about an inch lip. You can't have that. You can have max half inch. So we've priced changing some of those things. You have ADA parking. It's good. All the way around from an ADA standpoint, the building's not bad at all. Heating and air conditioning. Rocky with AirTech, who's here, went down there and took a look at it and thinks that it's in pretty darn good shape. You do have AC, you do have heat. One cautionary point though, the chambers in the summer when it's 94 and you have 49 people in there might get a little toasty. But it's warmer here now.
Wear short sleeve shirts. Blouses.
Another issue with the chambers is we have a layout for it, and it has about shows about 48 chairs with a raised dais, and Leslie will get into that. Technically, because of the size of the room, per the building codes, it'd be classified in A occupancy, which is assembly, which requires two exits. But the kicker is it's not allowed in a one-story wood frame building. You have a two-story building, it's wood frame. Our chair layout shows 48 chairs. The fire marshal and the building department will allow us to post a sign that you've seen in restaurants and places, this room not to exceed more than 49 occupants, and we can call it in, and we're good to go. That was a kind of a yes for me. Got my building around that one. So with the building department, we had a meeting with those guys. We talked about the second floor accessibility, the B occupancies, and that kind of a synopsis of that. We also met with the planning department, and they were equally cooperative with us. In terms of building area heights and setbacks, we are A-okay. At this point, Deborah and James don't get to weigh in until you pass their stuff down the road. So we're just dealing with Deschutes County. Well, this currently listed has a B occupancy for office. We're going to a government facility. It's still a B occupancy, so we don't have a change of occupancy, which doesn't trigger putting in a bunch of new parking. So you can leave it just the way it is. Expand your gravel parking a little bit so you have some overflow, and you're good to go. Currently, though, FEMA regards your site as being in the floodplain because when it was raised up to put the building in there, they never did a zone amendment. So it's still, as far as they're concerned, floodplain, which you can leave it that way, but if one day you want to come in and add more parking or you want to put in a second building, which has been approved, and the information is in this packet, by Deschutes County, just to the south of the existing, you might need to go through that process at that time. Les is going to talk about the construction costs a little bit. Storm and sewer and water. Seems like that's a hot topic. The guys are in the chamber. We chatted with Dick Moran with HGE down in Coos Bay. He says, you're hooked up. You're good to go. He witnessed the connection to the district and the city, and there should not be any issues as far as that goes. And then we'll kind of give our final conclusions at the end, and Leslie can talk about the plan.
Thanks. So going through the plans, what we did was we looked at sort of tiers of working on your plans. So we looked at the minimum that we could do to accommodate your needs right now, and that would be if you look at your plans then under tab 3. The first sheet is just showing the site plan and the improvements that John talked about for upgrading the sidewalks. And those are sort of in the dark hatch. So those are the areas that we would propose removing and replacing those areas of the sidewalk to meet ADA. The next sheet is the floor plan for what we're calling as phase one. And you can see that most of the work is happening in your proposed council chamber. And so what we're showing is a raised dais that would accommodate seven council people and then two people on each of the two wings that we're showing there. We would have an ADA ramp, and then we would also provide a step there. And the existing furnace remains, and then we have a small coffee bar in the back so that if you had long meetings or other functions in that room, that you could use that for laying out food or beverages. And then the other plan is that you would have tappable surfaces. Then we're showing that as a dash line on the north and south wall. south wall so that, as for instance today, we could attack the plans up for you to let you see those. In terms of changes to the inside, we're creating a small hall off the main entry that would be a reception window there. And that would have shutter doors that you would be able to shut if that person wasn't in the reception area. As John talked about, we would be eliminating one of the restrooms in the council chamber, but we would still keep your two existing restrooms functional. And we've created a door there at that end of the hall so that in after hours you would be able to use the council chambers as a meeting area or your council chambers and then have access to the restrooms, but then people wouldn't have access to the upstairs. We also created a new little office. Right now there's a little counter when you come in from, it'd be the east side of the building. We're creating another office there as well as across the hall. That's an existing office. Well, we're creating an office. It's there, but we're just walling it in. So those would be the offices that are at this time would be overflow and also provide that reasonable accommodation if you needed to have somebody from the second floor move down to the first floor. The second floor, no changes in phase one. Then we have the exterior elevations, but there's really no changes except on the east elevation that door would be removed. All the elevations are the same. Phase two, what we're doing is showing expansion into the Edward Jones area, so we're doing very much like we did on the other side of the hall, creating another hall that goes into the Edward Jones area and building a new restaurant to take advantage then of that whole north wing of the building. And we just show a potential office layout that utilizes their existing kitchen and their existing office and their existing restroom and their existing closet. No changes to the second floor. Phase three is the big one. This is phase three. We're showing phase 3A and 3B, and what we're showing here is an option to add an elevator to take advantage of using the second floor. And so what you can see is in the corner of the main lobby area, we've added a little elevator. Well, not a little, an elevator. Council chamber remains the same, but you can see as you go upstairs then, what we've done is we've added eight offices and two restrooms upstairs, and then there's an elevator and an elevator lobby. Phase 3A adds a grand stairway to the, it fills in that open area in front of the building where you have those trusses and it's all open. We would fill that in to create a stairway there and a conference room because it's already there. Might as well close out so we wouldn't be going outside the building's footprint. And then what we're just showing is another option then on the second floor that shows more of an executive office configuration in the main part of the building and then retaining two offices on the side. But the intent here is, oh, and I'm sorry, the other thing that we did have to add is a new exterior covered stair on the south of the building to get people out of that area. And that was also applicable to phase 3A, that additional stair.
As long as kind of gives you some extra space so that down the road, so you can have some cops and it'll give you a location to maybe put them in the Edward Jones space and do other things upstairs to accommodate what you need. So overall, you get quite a bit of flexibility with the plans.
Yeah, that phase three says beyond 20 years, and looking at it, it's beyond 20 years. So
yeah.
The building would be paid off, and you know, who knows what will happen 25 years from now.
But I think it's exciting because you have a very flexible, usable building. Yes. And your ability to expand in any of the directions is really easy without doing a lot of addition to the footprint. So I think it's a great building for that. Good bones, as we would say. If you go to tab 4, we have cost estimates. And what we try to do is provide you with a lot of options. And so what we've done is the first couple of pages shows the basic work that we've included in the cost estimate. And so what we have are, if you go to page 21 and 22, what we show are the different cost options. And the highlighted yellow cells are what we've included on page 21 for the first cost estimate, and that includes the site work, the improvements to the sidewalk, painting the exterior, changes for stair and railing to the upstairs to make that accessible, just adding on stair rail extensions. And then the Edward Jones area, at this time we weren't proposing any changes. And then we were proposing the changes to those core offices. We're calling the core offices, the existing offices, and creating those new little offices in the reception area. So we're calling those the core offices. And on the first one, we said we would paint the interior and refinish the doors. For the council chamber, the middle price, we had a base price point number one, which is your base level. And what we did was we priced three different levels of finishes in the council chambers. So we did a modest one and a medium one, and then nothing ever gets truly extravagant, but we just upgraded some of the cabinetry and finishes to the surface of the cabinetry. And we also gave you different lighting and coffered the ceiling so that you'd have more of a sense of a very nice council chamber that isn't opulent or isn't over the top, but it provides you with an image for the city that is, it's dignified and it's a place that commands respect. So what we did was we did three different levels, and you can see on page 20, we described three different levels of finishes. So in every one, we have a base level, and then you add a bit to upgrade it. On the page 22, what we're showing are, the same cost, but this time what we did was we added price point 3 to the base for the council chambers, and then we also added the same finishes of granite to the coffee bar and the transaction counters so that everything would match. So that's an attempt just to make all of the finishes match. We also added energy efficient light fixtures for about $3,000. And what else we have? That's the only thing we added on that one. So that brings the price on that second option to $172,678, and that equals about $72.43 a square foot for those upgrades. And the one on the previous page is $156,262, and then for the 2,384 square feet, that comes to $65.55 a square foot for the improvements.
Yeah. Go on all that.
Sure.
Yeah, as agent of record for the city in regards to the structure. And a question, assuming that the trigger exists since it's a two-story structure, what is the trigger on the future that may result in retroactive sprinkling of that structure? It is currently not sprinkled.
There's no requirement for the current building codes as it exists now, sprinkle that building with the occupancy and the size of the area it is, the separation to the streets, the yardage, and everything it has. So at this point, under current codes, there's no requirement.
Do you have the second floor is fully occupied?
Correct.
Good.
Thank you. That's a good question.
Good question, yeah. So basically, kind of in conclusion, did you have something else you
wanted
to
say? No, I'm good.
We think that overall, the building is in a perfect location for you guys. It presents a very good image for the city. We've proposed doing some exterior painting, upgrading to it. It was just slightly to make it more identify with the city of Lapine rather than the old Remax building. But in what we have been able to find, there are no major hurdles, obstacles, things that have come up that are major red flags at all.
I'd like to make a comment first. I think everyone can see, and I hope that they realize that, there was a great deal of work by the council and the city staff to bring this to us to this point. This is an existing building, and you've heard already the advantage we have taken by having it an existing building versus building one. very plain as to what's been said. So I think it's a marvelous opportunity, and I hope that everybody sees that. So let me
just one point. As your realtor, I've gone through the lease with Edward Jones, and I don't think it's a major point, but their lease goes till August of 2012, and it's almost an automatic renewal for 5 years after that point. So I wouldn't plan on using that Edward Jones space for another 7 years.
And for the record, please name an address. Wayne?
Wayne Kovacs, 51412 Mack Court, Lapine. Are there any provisions for audiovisual in the conference rooms, or is that something that comes separately?
That comes separately.
Okay.
Rick has been working with Tony Sprando to provide you guys with a cost for that. And we all met together.
Yeah,
well, the design.
Wasn't make it easy to facilitate while you're making the improvements and so forth,
cabling, yes,
and
right, exactly,
et cetera.
Yeah.
That will all be part of it. It's just outside of their conduit. They're going to cut and run the conduit to the center, like where the speakers talk. And then this person is going to drop our plans for that. And I put $10,000 in because we'll have speakers for everyone, microphones for 11 people, three out there for those folks. Under the code, you have to have three wireless for people with hearing impairing problems. There's a lot of, one of the things people need to understand, if you were building this for your own business or something, it's a whole different set of laws. And we were on the phone today. He was giving me prices, and I was like, God almighty. But it's the codes and requirements that a city has to build under. And so you can say, well, I can build for half that. You know what? You probably can.
Mm-hmm. You
know? And we wanted to make sure that, like, you know, you can put one speaker on each side. What you do is you have to turn it up so everyone hears, and then what happens is people with hearing aids. So, you know, we talked about having, I think the Dells are that big, we talked about having eight down speakers, and, you know, so that it spreads that sound evenly around the room. You can have a privacy button. When you're sitting up there and you're testifying, or you're taking, you know, you can hit a privacy button. So we need a wire to where it goes in directly into our tapes and everything. And it's, and then a PowerPoint, it'll be mounted up above, mounted so the person sitting out there can plug in. There'll be a screen that drops over from the side, you know. So I think, and you know, other groups will use the room. I mean, from planning commissions to community groups, you'll find, I think, it'll be the nice place in town. Everyone will want to use it for stuff. And then it costs us money to make it to where you can use it with the city hall closed. I mean, because you've got to be able to use the restrooms over there, and you've got to be able to close off, lock off everything. And so that adds thousands of dollars. That if it's your own private business, you don't have to do. So, and it's a small square footage.
Mm-hmm.
So the incremental costs go up.
Right.
Because it's kind of smaller. Overall, we'll have about $125 when this is said and done, $130 a foot, I think. COCC's new buildings they're building, that they're putting out right now, are $200 and some a foot without land. So
I was just going to say, it'll be about $200 to $240
a building. Yeah, so we're getting it all, really half. Remodeled half will last us 20 plus years, first class. And the difference between that middle and call it the nicer is less than $20,000. And when you spread that over 20 years, yeah, you can sit and fret over, you know, and the lowest one had Formica on the front. And Adele and I, we were there, and we're like, I think that all of you, you don't want the front of the council room, because you know what, it'll be an orange Formica, and then you'll be in there 10 years from now.
Thank you very much. I would like to ask, we happen to have a county commissioner sitting here, and in this audio-visual part that we will see come about. I had a thought about the idea of some kind of partnership with the county to make some kind of connection between the county in the audio visual that, like the BOCC has meetings, and we have interconnection in these meetings. They could stay up then in the wintertime and be very present in our council chamber. So
I think Tony would really like that.
Would you
sure.
to speak
actually
to that?
What we're doing as a commission is we're looking at a technology upgrade to our meetings so that our meetings could be either on TV, online, or streamed or something. So we're already going through that kind of process, and I think if you just came to us with the request could we as a county look at how we would create our presence down here, our IT people could easily give you the needs that you would have to address and then maybe any challenges that you have. But it seems like a no-brainer, and we should be able to do it. And if you look into the future, right now this is a legislative session, and COCO, Central Oregon Cities Organization, with Doug Riggs, has got sites in most of Central Oregon that connect to the Salem and with our legislators, and so you would be able to locally do that rather than drive to Bend, and that just gets you open to the rest of the world.
And my thoughts were is that this, if we're going to do this and we're looking at having counters that's going to last us 20 years, we should actually be looking at the technology that would set us up to be successful.
Well, the Skype, or whatever that is right now, you can almost do it. You know, like that.
Well, that's one way.
Well, they might have to cross that by working with the schools, too. Oregon State University, COCC, maybe they would like to use this space at different times and win that.
I think I just wanted to inject in here that we have there's a time frame for us, you know, because we're going to do this building and everything, and we need to make that move. And I know that I have no doubt, none of us sitting here, I'm sure, have a doubt that our city manager will have taken that whole idea.
Yeah, well, I thought about that. It's really, you know, from our end, you got the projector up there. It's really, it's more of what the signal's coming from, because it's going to come through the broadband signal, I think. And so it's really, yeah, figuring that out. And I know one thing, we're going to put a big pipe underneath the ground, because once you pour that concrete once, we're going to put a big enough one that you could pull lots of wires.
Two
pipes. You know, there's one idea. The other thing I had thought about, we're off from that, but you know, once you get a cable system that's willing to do it, it's pretty easy, just like the legislature. You put a camera back there, and you can televise your meetings.
Right.
Pretty easy. I mean, we're not far off from that being cheap and easy.
Well, not only that, some of these regional meetings, if you were able to sit at this at our council chambers and appear to be with that meeting, it could save a lot of travel. And if energy costs keep going up, it'll save a lot of people.
Yeah. He's trying to get out of going to Boppin. No, good point. So, okay.
So where we are in this, what we need to do is, when we made our offer back a couple months ago, we put four conditions in any little book that you have from Sid. But the four were, obviously, the light, we're applying to the council. As we told you, we got to say no to this before we actually bought it. We wanted to have financing that was acceptable to you. The third was a report from our architect in this case, HSR, and the functionality of the building that comes up with some costs. We wanted to note up the ability to meet the ADA requirements for a public building, which they've addressed that, and copies of the Edward Jones lease. Those were our conditions we need to tonight to approve, close this deal, basically, approve the purchase. In your documents, you'll find on the financing, there's a one-page sheet. I don't know what you put in there. It's just that we already went past it there, Mayor.
Yeah.
It should look something like this, or...
Oh, right. Okay.
They got too many papers.
Yeah.
That's it.
They're just in the order in which they're given to me.
Yeah. Okay.
one of the ones actually for
the... And I think the public will be interested because you all have numbers. The bonds we got were through the Lee Morgan City Association of Counties. We ended up getting a good bond rate of like 5.3%. They were about a point higher than that just a month ago, and so we got lucky there. That's cheap borrowing. This $520,000 bond sale, we'll get our money next Monday or Tuesday. And we sold with some other cities. There were three of us that did it. We get to net out of that $497 and some change, and the difference is the bonding and, my God, the documents and the paperwork you get with this. And it's financed over 20 years. We had to pay $330,000 for the building, which we got a great deal there. We have to put down $52,800 as a down payment. The only reason we have to do a down payment, which lowers our debt, so it's, you know, it's okay. We have the contingency. We have a $100,000 contingency, and we'll do a transfer at our next meeting out of the contingency fund, $52,000. But it's because we lease Deborah Jones, these are tax-free bonds, and you cannot have a lease space paid for with tax-free bonds, so you have to calculate their space. And then you figure that from the $330,000, and it comes to the $52,000. We can't break the lease. He's got a lease, and we can't evict him. There was no way to make us own the building. And like I say, we still would have paid for it. It just lowered our debt. It was like giving a down payment. So that leaves $219,800 to remodel. You just got the proposals. It was $156,000 or $172,000. About $25,000, could be $20,000 to $25,000, I tried to estimate high, for architects for the construction drawings. This was just a plan. They did a great job. Now we have to go out and actually have blueprints drawn. And you have to have engineers. When you're changing a room, you have to move ducts. That's where him and I work, where he goes.
I'm
right
there.
I'm
hiding back here.
You're like, my God. But again, we're not my house or my building. It's the public building. And then some furnishings, you know, when you add 49 chairs, if you spend $50 a piece, you start doing the math. They just cost money. If they're $100 a piece, and you need nice chairs that people can sit in that are soft, you need them to stack. So when you have an event that has tables and you need to have some tables in there, you know, and then because we have nothing, and we have three borrowed office desks over here. So you put in $10,000 for furniture, $10,000 for a sound system. Anyway, you can see about $200,000 if we do the mid-level, $217,000 if we do the upper level, and we have $219,000. And these are obviously estimates. We would hope the bids come in less because they bid this estimator. You think they tend to bid high. They like to make sure that they We want to go, yes. We have to pay prevailing wage. There was no way around it. That's another hard edge. I was like, God, isn't it too small a job? It's a prevailing wage job. You cannot do anything about that. It's Oregon state law. So, then that affects the contractors a bit because they have to be comfortable doing Davis-Bacon prevailing wage jobs. A lot of contractors, in general, if they're smaller or if they're more, sometimes they just are not into that. So what we talked about doing, when Adele and I and then you and I talked about having a fair, and I've already had some guys bring by some cards and locally that want to help. What we'll do is put this out for bid once we get the plans. We will then try to get some folks to use local subs or generals. We'll make plans available locally for free, I think. It's my recommendation. The city would have to, we buy them and actually have them available. And then they'll provide those. And just let these contractors know that we want as many local subs as we can get. You cannot force them to use them. But it's just to kind of give a little hand up with our locals. And the general has to worry more about the Davis-Bacon stuff, so sometimes the subs can handle that. So, we have the money. We get it next week. You've got the reports. We need you to approve the purchase. So we can close and go to the title company and take ownership in the next week or two. Then I'll go into what we do next.
Okay. Is there any discussion? I mean, we've heard everything that I believe we need to hear. And having said that, then I will entertain a motion that we approve the purchase of the new City Hall.
I would like to move the purchase of the new City Hall.
Second?
I'll second, yeah. The group's got a motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous?
Great job. This is a big deal for everyone. I really am.
Now, let's say one more thing. I don't doubt, in saying this for the council, and if I'm wrong, I apologize, but we have a city staff that has put a great deal of effort into this, and honestly, they need the accolades for bringing this to the city, putting it in place, and presenting it to us this evening. So please, for our city staff.
Yeah. Well, I gotta get this done so I can spend a month or two in it. So next, now we have to put it out for the construction drawings, and so we have to put out an RFP on that. We'll do it fairly short, let people put some prices in, and we'll try to move that along, because we'll send it out to the same people that bid before, and then we can pick someone, and we'll come to you with something where I can just get that done so that we don't... What I didn't want to do is spend 60 or 90 days getting that done when, it doesn't need to be. It's about a 60 to 90 day construction, you think?
Bidding it, well, 60 days to do it.
About 8 weeks.
Yeah. Construction itself, yeah.
So if you kind of figure we spend April getting the rest of March, first part of April, getting someone hired to do it, then how long would it take to do the plans?
Oh, month, 6 weeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then, basically we got May, part of April, maybe July, August, it'd be nice to get in there. I said August, but it'd probably be September. Mm-hmm. But before winter, we'd be in there going like crazy. So I will come back, but we do have to make a transfer on the contingency for that. That will come next meeting.
Okay.
And I'll email you when we get it bought. But I don't want to write the check until we... Well, a couple of you can sign the check. Until we get the money in the bank account.
Anybody want to draw straws about who signs the check? Thank you, Rick. There's an application for a budget committee member, and I think that's in our packet, and
thanks to the architects.
I think they did a good job. Thank you very much. We have an application for a budget committee member filed by Bobby D. Steffens, who lives on Schedule Road here in La Pine. And Mr. Steffens is in the audience this evening. And I would also remind you that he was our charter committee chair. So are there any... comments or any questions or...
Oh, I think he did a good job on the charter. Very good.
Excellent.
He showed a lot of good leadership.
Don, anything?
If I think we will approve him.
Then I would entertain a motion that we accept Mr. Steffens' application to be a member of the budget committee.
I so move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. You're on board again. Or still.
We still need one more.
Yes, we do. Anybody out there that we can give you an application if you're in the city tonight?
There'll be two meetings. Right now we have them on the... May 24th and May 31st on a Tuesday.
That'll give you an idea about, you know, there's only two meetings.
Could be a third, but that's it.
Okay. Sponsorship request for Lapine Frontier Days. That's in your packet. Have any questions? Dan, anything?
No. Did we sponsor, or did the city sponsor them last year?
I believe we did.
I'd like to know how much we have in our budget for sponsors.
Well, you know, that's not going to be a mess. This is, we just took out what last week we took
$500 out for rodeo last time, and there was a considerable amount in there. I thought it was a number of 30,000, but I wouldn't.
No. This is the first time.
No, you're absolutely right. Was on that.
Is this the first time that Frontier Days has come to the city and asked for money?
Okay.
We did the rodeo.
Donations. We have 2,000. Did we do that one donation check yet? So we figure $500 less. So we have $965 left in that fund. Now, you've got to, you know, they get whiffed. We do this. As you remember, last time we did a 6-month thing, this is round numbers, we were like at 25-26% of our expenses at 50% of our year. I mean, and you can move things within the general fund. So, you know, we have tourism funds, we've got other little, but under donations, you've got 900 left.
What is it? Is it legal to take it, for instance, out of tourism funds, because they do bring tourism into the city, don't they?
Yes, but the tourism fund is highly monitored by interested parties in the community.
Well, now that we're here.
Yes. That's the last place I would take it right now, as long as you still have money in the donation fund. You could probably legally, but I just think...
Rick, is there anything you see there that you could recommend that as an appropriate place if we were to decide that we wanted to sponsor this at the requested level that we would go to for
yes.
funds?
We have memberships. We have got more than $2,000 left there, and we're probably done paying memberships for the year. I mean, you could look like you're paying a membership to the clinic. But again, you can move. You have the this is a template. You know, you set this, but you as a council can decide to spend $500 more in a fund, and but you just mentioned we got to know that we're, but as far as the fund itself, we're at 27% as of, that would be March 2nd. Well, we're now down at 8 months.
That's great.
Wow. So,
I'd like to recommend that maybe Ann can say a few words for the record on, I mean, everyone knows about the Frontier Days, but just say a few things. Yes.
Ann Gaywith, president of Lapine Frontier Days Association. As I said in my letter, part of the reason that we came to the city this year is there are issues with our site. The Lapine Park and Recreation District has a big remodel plan. We won't have use of the inside of the building whatsoever, so we've had to really rework our event. Primarily, we are not going to have our art show. We just did not feel that was an appropriate event to have outside under a tent. But we feel we can have our little mini fair, which is the Bay Fest, Brew Fest, Preserve Fest, Youth Fair, those sorts of things would be fine outside under a tent. So that is a fairly large cost. In fact, I do have a bid from Incredible Events in Redmond for a 30 by 30 tent, which is going to be pretty well squished, but a 30 by 30 walled tent comes in at about $1,200 just to rent that for our event.
That's all.
So that was the reason I decided to come to the city for money. We're going to need additional porta potties because we won't have the use of the bathrooms inside the building. And then the general cost for Frontier Days itself, of course, have gone up over the years, and sponsorship levels have gone down, as with every event probably on the planet. So that's where the figure of 2,000 comes from. I think you all know the value of Frontier Days to the city of Lapine, to the community of Lapine, not just the city. It is the largest event that Lapine has. I'm proud to say that we are hailed in all parts of the state and beyond. There are groups that plan their reunions, et cetera, family reunions, as well as high school reunions and that sort of thing. They plan them around the 4th of July weekend so that they can come to Lapine and enjoy Frontier Days. It's my pride in the event and how Lapine presents itself to these people from out of town is just knows no bounds. It's grown to such a point that parts of it can just not go away, and we have to maintain a certain level of for the event for these people so that they'll come back again and tell people about us. Any other questions?
I'll start. I think Ann hit it right on the head. I'm in favor of moving some money around in the TRT fund. It is the biggest event that Lapine has. It does draw people from all over Central Oregon. And I think if any organization deserves support for the TRT funds, it's this event. I think we need to, with the problems they're facing, this would be money well invested in Lapine.
For the record, I'd like to say I wasn't opposed. I just wanted to.
No, I know where we were at. Yeah.
We would probably take it out of. I mean, again, we can pick us, but I would take it out of the. Memberships. Take it out of memberships. Thank you. And again, at the end of the year, these things, as long as your fund total down here is fine, you're within the law. The problem with the TRT thing is that's pretty allocated. Until we separate it out, one, I'm going to have to get into the TRT issue. Because of the sewer and water and other things, I haven't been able to. But if that was to settle down, I want to get into the TRT because they keep asking questions of me. And to be honest, I've had no time to study it. But I do want to get into it. And also, next year's budget, we'll have it as a separate sheet. We've got to get to where when we have an extra $2,000, some extra money carries forward. Then you'll have some extra money sometimes. Mm-hmm. Right now it's lost in this general fund. And so you have a budgeted amount, and that's one particular item. We've spent basically 90% because they pretty quickly take their money. Mm-hmm. So there is no extra money there.
Who's taking the money?
It goes to these groups, all these...
Tourism promotion.
We turn it over to the visitors center.
Okay, so is it the visitors center that's watching?
Well, I mean, they have a whole system, but I'm going to get into it, and I'm going to get more involved to look at it and study it and make it to everyone can follow it. But I'm just saying, I've inherited this system.
Okay.
And this system is that they spend it.
Needs to be fixed.
They spend it all.
So in other words, is that the donation would not come out of the TRC?
That's correct.
Okay.
I mean, we get money that comes in from TRT, but it's in the general fund.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay.
And you're paying bills with it.
Yeah.
Dan, anything?
I think that, like Dan said, this is the biggest event. It's what puts the Lapine on the map, and I think we need to support it as much as we can. You know,
having heard everybody, I would entertain the motion to approve the request put forth by the Lapine Frontier Days Association in the amount of $2,000.
I so move.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I was talking to the commissioner. What fund? Do you want to specify the fund, or did you?
Let's specify the fund.
Donation. I mean, the
membership
fund. I'm looking over to my senior management over here. Membership fund, okay?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you don't have.
And now we move to a second request, a donation request for Centennial Park. We have that in our package, and we have with us Linda Stevenson. So I think I'd like to have Linda speak to this for us.
Hold on. Go ahead, Gary. We got that. First, we do that with a donation to the true donation fund.
We have 900 in the donation fund.
We have 900 and something.
I'm Linda Stevenson, and as most of you know, for years I've taken care of the little park, the Triangle Park, which has officially been named Centennial Park, last year when we completed our sign. And at that time I had come to the commissioners and requested money to help me complete that project, of which they donated a sum of $1,200, which I hope everybody's happy with it. Well, in going into phase two, Stu and I had talked about it, and we think that we need a flag to be flown at Centennial Park as our local people, as our visitors come into our town, to know that we do have that support of everything that's gone on in our country. And we're proposing that it be on the west side of the sign. We have been in contact with Ben Flag and Banner, and they have given us a price, and I say us because Stu has worked with this, on this project, of $1,500. And I have a, and I'm sorry I didn't put it in nice little packets like everyone has, it's a 20-foot aluminum flagpole, and we think because kids might tamper with it, the running gear would be to the inside. So they quote us the price, Central Oregon Flag and Banner, for $1,500, and Flag and Banner will pay the freight, which is about $350 to $450 savings. So they will foot the bill for that, and they will also deliver it to us for free of charge to the site. And of course it will come with written instructions on how to put it in. Obviously, we have gone to the county, there's no permit required. And as most of you know, the county owns that piece of property. I don't know if Mr. knows that. The county has helped me out with that little piece for, I've been taking care of that piece for 24 years now. So we have contacted them, there's no permit required. And we do want it, of course, flown 24 hours a day. And so there's an additional $600 for the aerial type lighting, the cementing, the electrician to put it in. Now, Mr. Truax, that owns the station next door and multiple other stations, he is the one that we pulled the power off of his with his written consent, and he is more than happy to supply us with the power that we need to light our flagpole. Now, I do have a letter, kind of jumped the gun, my poor flag needs a pole. I have a letter. This is to certify that the accompanied flag, of which I do have, was flown over the United States Capitol on November 16, 2010. At the request of the Honorable Greg Walden, Member of Congress, this flag was flown for Centennial Park. So we have that flag that is ready to be put on this flagpole. As I did with the sign, I requested donations. Everyone's finding that due to the economy, I have gotten $400 in donations to put with, and we had come up with a total price. If you put the $1,500 together with the $600 it takes for the lighting and everything, and deduct the $400 I have for it, so what are we looking at?
$1,700.
Okay, to complete this project. If I have anything else to tell you. I don't think I do. Does anyone have any questions? We would like to get it completed this year. I don't know if Ann wants to say what the theme of this year's
Frontier Days. Our overall theme for Frontier Days this year is honoring our vets and members of the armed forces. We're going to do a flag retirement ceremony on Friday night. We want our usual flag folding ceremony, but at a different time. We are sending out invitations for local vets and members of the armed forces to join us, and of course in our parade and throughout the celebration. We're going to try to make it as big as we can. Mike Jensen's going to help with his vets group in Bend, and Jim Fleming as well. So we want to make it as big as we can to honor those folks. So we really be hand in hand to have,
yes,
have the flag at our, in the park at that point.
Our park done, if possible, by then. So I'm asking the council if there's any way that they could help us complete this project.
There's a comment, Judy.
Would there be a way the community could help? For example, I think the American Legion right now has a project going where you can buy a brick and have someone's name put on it for $25 a brick. Would there be any way that you could do a project, or maybe you could put in a patio or something, and people could buy bricks for some of the vets, and you could maybe earn some money that way?
Since it's such a small area, and I have an irrigation system in there, and we had to be very specific on where we positioned that sign. Number one, we had to stay in accord. We're working with a state highway and a county road, and I don't think there would be enough room. It would go over part of my irrigation. And so...
Well, maybe there would be a way that, if in fact you considered a project like that, although we may not be able to seat the bricks there, maybe they could probably be used for something else instead of part of the Port Arthur.
I believe that this is a very worthwhile idea that we can probably... Linda, you can look into, and Judy can provide you with some other expanded information on that, but I think I'd like to move on to deciding how much money we're going to give you.
Okay.
I have an interesting idea to throw out there.
Okay.
I know you and I have talked before, and I think that this is an excellent logo for the city. The grassroots effort, I think, symbolizes how it all came together, symbolizes, you know, the spirit of LaPine. And I think everybody has, you know, adopted this and they see it. And I think that if you would allow us to use as our official logo, that
Padilla and I had talked about it becoming the official logo on your letterhead. And I would suggest that probably if the city was going to do that, they might want to copyright it.
Right.
Maybe not. I haven't.
From my input on this, I agree. I've actually talked about this, but this subject's something that I've been involved in, and I agree with it, and I would be for it.
And I think that would be a great way that we could donate the full amount and then get something very good for the city as well.
Yeah. But what's the logo with you?
The logo? Oh, it's the sign.
So Councilor Adele has put forth the idea that we contribute the outstanding balance of, I think we're talking about $1,700. Mm-hmm. And so there's I would like to move into discussion with that, Dan.
I think it's something we could all be proud of. Mm-hmm. You know, it's already a great identity piece, and with the flag there, it shows our patriotism and that we honor our country and our veterans, and we're patriotic.
Along with that flag,
support that.
I have enough rock work left too that when we place the What I'd like to do is keep it flush with the ground. There again, a maintenance issue, mowing, if any of you have taken care of that. I also have enough money set aside from the sign project. I've been waiting for this second phase to have a plaque put there that our centennial and when the park was dedicated. So that will go right up next to where our flagpole will be.
And you're able to handle that outside?
I can handle that outside. I set aside $200 out of the sign project that has been in an account over at South Valley Bank.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, are you going to go down and who, except the only nasty phone call I've actually had recorded on my recorder in here, was anonymous, was that this flag out here isn't properly lowered and raised and all these half-mast stuff. And the guy was very not nice. And he, of course, he was going to recall me from my position. But he was like, I'm a veteran, and you, if you want a flag, you manage it right. If you aren't going to manage it right, you take it down. And yesterday it was supposed to go at half-mast. Well, again, just so that you know, it may be on a Saturday it's supposed to come down, and you're out of town. Who's doing it? Who's putting it back up?
Mr. Martinez has offered to take care of that for
Okay. Just forward those phone calls.
It is a big issue. And I'm sure we get a lot of wind and that lawn dries out terribly bad. We, you know, getting the traffic, I'm afraid we'll probably have to replace that flag at least once a year. Easily once a year.
Probably twice.
Mm-hmm. Because the trucks that go down the... Yes, is that not right, Stu?
What's that?
That you did volunteer to...
I showed that in the beginning.
Yes, you did.
I was still going to stand by that.
Did you borrow your riding lawnmower to get down there?
This is a big deal. You know, it's been a volunteer effort for years. And I've even had, we were in L&S Gardens, we're 1 3/4 miles down Huntington. I've literally ridden my riding lawnmower across Highway 97 to mow the little park, but it's always gotten done, and it will continue to get done.
So perhaps the next step would be to obtain that piece of land from the county.
I said under my breath when it was mentioned that the county owns that, and under my breath, it was for the moment.
There's nothing wrong with somebody else owning it and insuring it. You get to use it. You got no liability on it.
Somebody hits it, it's their problem.
It's really not bad having them own it.
And that's good advice.
I talked to Dennis Luke about it, and he said, we own a park, and you do.
So I think we've brought this to the point that, Don, your comments, please.
My comment is I think we ought to take care of the outstanding balance, whatever it is. I think that's one of the most recognizable things coming into this town, and I think Linda really deserves a lot of credit for spearheading it and getting it where it is
today. Well, I do want to thank everybody because I'm not an organization. I'm a person of one, and with Stu's help, and it was the same thing when I did the sign, and it's so hard to go before a group of people and to have an individual just ask for money, and with the confidence of the counselor and the community, knowing that I will get the job done, I really appreciate that.
Stu, had you finished in your input?
No, I agree that we need to do the remainder of the balance or whatever we can do, but I think adopting the sign and the logo needs to be discussed at a future meeting.
At a goal session?
Yes.
Okay.
So it needs to be two separate items.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Linda, very much.
Thank you.
All right. If there's no further discussion, I would entertain a motion that we provide the funds in the amount of $1,700 to complete the monies required to establish a flag in Centennial Park, and as described.
I'll make that motion.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. All right.
Good job.
Are you calling that city improvement?
Yeah.
where are we taking it from?
I'm
looking to see where
this called city improved.
Yes.
City improved.
City improved.
That's a city improved. Thank you for that. Since it's on the road going to Huntington, that's it. We have $25,000 in that fund that we've spent.
That's
That's your
beautification
of the highway.
Send it to ODOT.
Other matters. And I've got the two added agenda items there. So Cocoa News.
Okay. We've been a Cocoa member since the beginning since we were incorporated. Cocoa has picked up the tab, I believe, since in our incorporation, and we have actively participated for, I think, 2 years now. It is a real beneficial organization. It kind of keeps us centrally in the loop of, and regionally in the loop of a lot of legislation and a lot of discussion. And what they do is they do their dues proportionally to the population. And our dues are going to be $824. And I'd like to make a motion to have those put into the next, to approve those to go into the next fiscal budget. Ben pays $42,000. Madras pays $3,363. Prineville pays $5,000. And Redmond pays $13,000.
Is this per capita?
Yeah. So the lowest one would be Maupin. They pay $268.
This is, you want this in next year's budget?
Yeah. And they need an official vote.
Okay.
We need to pay our way.
Okay.
Yep, I agree.
Okay, Dan?
Yep. It's an important membership.
Yeah. I would entertain a motion that we move to put that dues into our budget for next year, and that we, do we need a letter?
No, I think just the minutes.
Okay.
I move the appropriate $824 in COCO dues in next year's budget.
I second.
Is there a second? Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. And then you had another subject item?
Oh, yeah. HB 3347. Okay. I was a part of a meeting to discuss this bill in the middle of January. And
what is the bill?
The bill, okay, let me read what the title bill is, what it says. It says, authorize Pine Forest Development, LLC, to develop approximately 617-acre resort. Exempts development from statutes relating to the destination resorts and other specified land use statutes. Statewide land use planning goals and provisions of Deschutes County acknowledged comprehensive plan and land use regulations. Authorizes Caldera Springs Destination Resort to remove deed restrictions and restrictive covenants related to overnight use of residential units for specified payments. To require Deschutes County. Requires Deschutes County, upon receipt of payment by the department, to form a sanitary authority. So what does this mean for us? So there's a lot of things wrong with this legislation, but I want to focus my comments on exactly what impact it would have for the city. And I'd like to discuss it in its original form, the way that was intended to be passed. I know that there has been some amendments or whatever, but no one has seen those. So let's just discuss what we have here. So I did some research, and how it would affect the applying was that it would take our state revolving fund. We would not be eligible for any state monies. How I did some preliminary investigation, but actually I had asked Loretta to help me with it because I've been working so much. But so essentially what it is that funds are regionally distributed. And this project, I think, is $24 million in what I was told, would take the lion's share. And so then, you know, so then we would, not only would it take the lion's share in the first year, but then it would be first in line in any prior years to that. So this state fund also addresses issues of clean water. So being that we're going to be taking over the water in the sewer district, we don't know what we're going to be going into. We have known issues. We have the pivot system that probably will need to be addressed. And we would probably be needing some federal money or some, you know, some help. So if we allow this bill to go through, then we would make us ineligible for any funding at a federal level. So that is the impact. But actually, I'd like to.
Did you have anything first?
What I'd like to do here is I'd like to. This is an added agenda item, and it's a discussion in the council. And any comments that we want to originate from this, I'd like to have presented during public comments, which is next. And at this point, we'll the council will discuss it as they would like. Were you?
Okay, so now, does everybody understand about the state revolving fund?
I would like this put on our next agenda item, our next meeting, so that the council has all the same information that you have.
Right, but unfortunately, that this is was put on the table as an emergency legislation.
But at our council meeting?
No, but there's an imminent deadline.
Yeah, under our rules, you can add things. If the council chooses to add something, you can take action under our rules.
Okay. So, but when did you find out about this?
We were in this meeting. So and then we went away, and one of the things that they told us is that I was a stakeholder, but I couldn't figure out what stake I was holding. And so when I started researching it and find how it impacted us, and it was the link I found was the state revolving fund. And after talking to people in the community, that's why that they would need to come to us so we could buy onto this, because as we spoke to the state, that we would have an impact on their application if we said, hey, we would probably have a need sometime in the future, so please don't allow them to suck up all the money.
Right, and I have no problem with that. I would like to have the same information you have sitting right in front of me right now to listen to these folks.
I don't, and I'm uncomfortable.
That's me too.
Yeah,
well, could it have been distributed before the meeting started?
Well, I mean, I've been working, I haven't had a day off since February 14th. I mean, and so, the two own your business.
I don't know that.
Okay.
But anyway, So I guess maybe, I mean, it's a real, I thought it was a very important issue, and I know that there's been a lot of discussion out in the community, and one of the other things that brought it to the forefront was that there has been community meetings, and one of those meetings was in Sun River. And they, one of the conversation it was, is that they met with public officials, and they asked who were the public officials, and you and I were named, and
City of Lapine.
Okay, the City of Lapine was
named. I didn't hear any of that.
And so our silence was purported as being support, and so
reported by who?
Purported.
Oh, okay. Well, if you want to go ahead, that's fine.
Well, having said I was uncomfortable because I'm at a loss here a little bit. Can you, what is it that you think the council needs to do, or can you?
Well, I think that it needs to address the issues that impact the city. And that would be the state revolving fund.
And what's the nature of the state revolving fund?
So it's regionally distributed. It's used for usually for projects with clean water, having to do with that. It impacts us because, as I said, that, you know, we're stepping into the acquisition of the sewer and water district, and we don't really know. We do know that there are issues, namely the pivot field, and that we would have to address that at some time. So we need to leave that door open, that avenue open, so in case we do need some federal funding, because it's going to be quite a, you know, maybe millions, I don't know. Of dollars, so we need to leave those avenues open and not shut it off of the city. I think it's...
So what does the city need to do?
Well,
what do we need to do tonight? Or what are you suggesting we do tonight? Other than listen to...
Have an official position and write a letter to the state or the... No, actually, write a letter in opposition of HB 3347.
So you're asking for us to take a position on information that we're just getting tonight?
Well, I suppose so. Actually, you know, I thought, you know, you and I were at the same meeting, and I felt it was my obligation to go after that meeting to go and find out what the meeting was about, because I was very confused. And I did a lot of research and found out that there's not a lot of people within from here all the way to Sun River who support this legislation. And, and there's people out in the audience here that can tell you a whole lot more and speak a lot more eloquently than I can, unfortunately, and to get this this idea across.
I've got a question. I've got a quick question. From what I've heard, the water and sewer here deals mostly with USDA dollars. Is this connected with this revolving fund?
No, this is like a low-cost fund. And what they usually use it, municipalities use it to fund projects having to do with water. And what one of the components is that it's low cost, and that they can also, that they agreed to take a second position in case the municipality gets in trouble or has some financial issues. So it's like a really good thing. Another thing about this fund is that there was a lot of money put into it with the stimulus money, and that money in the future is probably not going to be there, so the fund is going to go back to its original size, which is probably not going to be as much. So us getting any funding behind this project would probably be nil.
We have a commissioner here. He might know a little bit about that. Maybe ask him his.
I think that's one idea, but I think looking at where we are at this evening and some of the comments we've already had, I think I'd like to ask the council to consider that listen to some public comments and then come back to this. Because I will tell you right now, personally, I'm in the same position that Stu is in, is that I'm uncomfortable with what I know about it and us taking a position this evening on something that it is apparent that it's extremely important. We need to know what we're doing and not just jumping off the bridge and saying we ought to go do this. I know there's an obvious emergency or time frame that's behind this, but I still think that we need to do this when we're fully aware of what's going on. So,
and I agree, it's good information, but all of a sudden you just have it.
So I'm with you. So if it's okay with the council, we'll move to open for public comment, and then we'll come back to this before we go to committee reports and that. So what I'd like to do at this point, then open it to public comments, and
because I suspect that this is going to be potentially fairly lengthy, not completely comment like nature. I had like a 30-second little comment.
I have no doubt that this could be lengthy, and so I would like for you, because of the nature of us gathering some cursory information here, I'd like to limit it to, I think, a 30-second, 30, 45 seconds to give us some idea of a rounder picture of this.
To make a quick comment about some other subject, then maybe you can deal with this in whatever length you wish.
Take your place.
Real quick, Art Hooker, the Pine Insurance Center. I just wanted to inform you, based on your decision to purchase the new city hall, that the insurance is all squared away on it. So, don't know what the premium is yet, because CIS City Insurance Services haven't told me. But the request for coverage has gone in, with the effective date being the same date that the lending institution said they would close. So as of, I believe, the 14th, which was the date that I was told by the lender, the insurance was on the building, if it burns down, you're covered.
Okay, so that was it. Okay. And Arda, on behalf of the council, if I can, councilors, thank you very much. I know you jumped on that, and it's very timely. Thank you.
That's why I'm here. Thanks.
All right. Collect your check later. Ed?
Ed Chris, 53446 Brookie Way, and that's in Wild River, Burgess Road. The fund she was talking about is called the Clean Water State Revolving Fund. It's administered by the Department of Environmental Quality, and it goes for projects like what you may have to do here with your sewer system, water system, whatever. And they usually emphasize rural areas, so you can understand that you may have some competition down the road here from the Pine Forest development. If they use an emergency clause and their thing is passed in the legislation in the next couple of weeks, because it dropped in committee just last week, and it's being legislatively, it's part of the legislative council, so it's being rewritten with the amendments. They will be in competition with you for some of the money. The Clean Water Fund has a prioritization system that it uses, and so you can look that up. If you go to DEQ and look up the Clean Water Fund, State Revolving Fund, you can see the information on that and their prioritization methods. I looked into that 3 years ago. talked to the director at that time, who's changed since then. But that's the fund she's talking about. It's a state fund, and they will prioritize programs for clean water and fixing sewer system municipalities and so on and so forth. So that's just something to take into consideration. What I really want to ask is, I got notice of the legislation from Steve Brunner in a phone call, and I set up a face-to-face meeting, which is how I like to work. And I invited Judy Forsyth to attend that meeting. So we sat down, and this was, Judy, was 3 weeks ago?
3 or 4 weeks ago.
About 3 or 4 weeks ago. So it was after the counselors were called, but in this meeting, Steve Brunner had mentioned to me that he was meeting with various people and also a lobbyist who's pushing this, which is Linda Smeringer. And he mentioned that he had a meeting with the Lapine City Council. But this wasn't a public meeting because he never met with the entire council. But they did call on several people to be met with. And what I'm curious about, because I've been researching how certain parts of this legislation came to be, because there's some parts of it that are extremely troubling. You need to read Section 4 of this bill. Very carefully take a look at it, because it's extremely questionable. This is supposed to be the part that Gene Wisnett has met, who's sponsoring the bill, one of the sponsors. I believe it has been rewritten to exclude that part, but we have not seen this revision yet. But I want to point out, how did this meeting come about? Where did the contact come from? Were you requested to be at the meeting? Did somebody make the suggestion? Was it a city councilor? Was it Steve Reiner that called you? Was it Linda Swearingen? Did somebody send you an email and ask for this? Who was invited to this meeting? Obviously, it wasn't going to happen in the public eye at a public city council meeting, so they wanted to not have a quorum present, evidently. I also have the question of who was actually there. I'm not concerned about a quorum. What I'm concerned about is, why did it come to the city council of Lapine when they're proposing a sanitary authority, which is a taxable district essentially, south of Sun River, with a feasibility study covered? Why did they come to you guys to talk to you and talk to me on the phone? They sent an email, I believe, to the chairman of the steering committee with DEQ. But this all happened after the meeting in January, evidently, with how many people were with the city council at this meeting. It's very interesting to me, and what I'm having a problem is that the people that were directly affected by the sanitary authority were never talked to. Nobody went to them and said, does this sound good to you? Is this a workable thing with you? You know, we did a feasibility study. In fact, I helped arrange a meeting with a bunch of homeowners, over 200, from Deschutes River Recreational Home Sites. Steve Brunner gave a presentation showing what the sewering of DRH hooking to Sun River might look like. Then they did the feasibility study, and they told these folks at this meeting they would come back and let them know the results, costs, and so forth. That never occurred. Then the legislation occurs, telling them, you're going to be a sanitary authority. You're not going to vote on it. You have no voting rights for 3 years. You have no referendum rights. This is actually written in the legislation. You need to read Section 4. I found this to be, I'll use one of the terms one of the planning commissioners I worked with at the county said, one of the most arrogant pieces of legislation I think I've ever read. And I'm referring mostly to Section 4. How can you, a for-profit, private company, order people to be in a taxable district with no right to vote on it for 3 years? Okay? Now, this hopefully, there was so much backlash about this, and I'll tell you right now, these folks here are from DRH. Where do you see them? Okay? I'm having a meeting with them in a couple of weeks. I'm also meeting with some of the people in Sun River who knew nothing about this. So there's a lot of concerns about this, but the legislation has an emergency clause attached to it to pass it with an emergency clause. You know what that means? First, second reading, adapted immediately, they can apply for the funds.
Yeah.
Where are you guys at?
Name is the application.
So I believe that what they're doing is they're setting themselves up to just put themselves at the front of the pile right away to go after more money. the county of Deschutes made a decision to give some of the money from the TDC PRC program from the new neighborhood to Sun River to do the feasibility study. I'm now becoming under the impression that they really never were going to hook these people up anyway. I've got a great deal of concern about that. The reason I'm bringing this up is because obviously they came to the city council for a reason. I'd like to know how the contacts were made, where this all started, who was at the meeting, and what was the meeting for? Were they looking for your support at the legislative level? Were they looking for a city council vote, perhaps, to support this legislation? I'm not sure. I'm following some trails around, and as an investigator, that's one of the things I do real well. I've turned over a lot of rocks, and you're not going to believe what I found under the rocks, but that's going to come later. The bottom line simply is, these questions really do need to be answered, because there's obviously been an effort here to exclude the very people that this whole thing was going to affect the most. And I find that a little distressing. I'm one of those kind of people, as Ken well knows, he's been on the radio program with me, so is Mr. Unger, actually. And I think the bottom line is I'd like to try to get to a solution thing. I'm not looking at a blame game here. What I'm looking at is, how did this come about? Who initiated it? And what's this all coming to? You need to take a stance on this, that as a city council, for the issues that you have with the city? Absolutely. But there's also another issue, and that is that this appears to have been done in an underhanded way, and I'm a little bit concerned about this. Openness and transparency is everything. Nobody was talked to about this legislation. I told Steve Runner. I also told Doug White, who former DLCD, who's now working with them as a planner, that basically they need this legislation to come back here for some local discussion before they take it to Salem. Unfortunately, it didn't happen that way.
Okay.
And now we're finding more trails on it.
Okay.
So anyway, it may affect you getting some clean water fund. I advise you to take a look at that fund. It's on the computer, and you can see what the prioritization levels are, because you're gonna need this probably when you take over this water and sewer district for the improvements that you need. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there further comments? I would like to have you make a brief statement and afford others time to do it. So,
are you talking?
To anybody that's going to make a statement.
Loretta Murphy, Post Office Box 2427, Laponia 97739. Just following up on Ed, I just want to clarify a little bit. First of all, if you want to look it up on the computer, the actual criteria, you can look under ORS 340.54, and the criteria that has to be met for the clean under the revolving fund can be found under there.
Okay.
I believe one of the big issues, and that's actually why we're here, is because we couldn't understand how it came about, why they came to you guys, and on a fluke, I happened to be talking to Adele right after that meeting. It was about something totally different. And she said to me, oh, I just got out of the meeting, I have to get back up to Bend. I said, oh, something new. And she said, oh, I met with... Oh, she said, I thought I was meeting Gene Wisner. Did I get that wrong? You thought he was going to be at the meeting? But he was not there. He didn't show up. And as soon as she said who was there, I said, what the hell? Sorry. What the heck? Were a lobbyist and the beneficiary of this legislation doing at that meeting in place of Gene? It just didn't sound right. It just made no sense. And as Adele said, I said, well, what was it for? And as she said, I haven't figured it out. So to make a long story short, I started looking into it, she was looking into it, and of course Ed is very knowledgeable about it. I spoke directly with the now project manager of the revolving fund. One of them, there's three. They divided the counties up into segments. Jaime Isaza, is the project manager. I wanted to make sure I understood correctly what this could do to the city of Lapine, how you could be affected. And the fact is, as Ed explained, it's not just about the fund. there are extra resources there right now that were given under, you know, we call it stimulus money. It was the jobs, blah, blah, creation. But stimulus money put into this fund in addition to the normal state monies. So there's more money there now than there normally ever is. That same money will probably be there only for this next year. And then that will be gone. There'll be no more of that, those federal dollars coming. Once you apply, and the next application capability is in May. So it is our belief, and I have a home in Sun River also. I also have a home and property outside of Sun River, directly affected where this, they were trying to create the sanitary authority. So I actually am affected from both sides of this. I believe one of the reasons this is an emergency bill is because they needed to get this through so they could make application in the May period for the next allocation of funds. It's not so much about getting your hands on the money immediately, how much they would get now, but what he explained to me is the importance is once you get your fingers in that till, you jump to the head of the line going down the road to stay there. So other people coming in behind you next year or applying for some funds will never get ahead of you. So once the private enterprise, Sun River LLC, Pine Forest Development, and that is what they are a privately held group of, you know, investors who, this is my personal opinion, this is customized legislation, handwritten to benefit people who paid $7.2 million for 617 acres at the height of, you know, property values to lift restrictions on the cabins in Caldera Springs because they can't sell them. They can't sell them because they've got these covenants on them. Well, you know what? A lot of people in this room probably can't sell what they own right now. Is somebody going to bail us out? Is somebody going to go write legislation to mandate mortgage modifications for us? And in essence, when you read, if you have a copy, don't get, would you make copies for them, of the draft, that is exactly what this bill does. It lifts all of their covenants and makes Caldera sellable. And then to the back end of that legislation, they tacked on the sanitary authority, which would have mandated this new authority. So everyone living between Sun River and State Rec Road would have been mandated into this new authority. The minute the gavel dropped, you're in, it existed. And in the legislation, you were hog tied and duct taped for 3 years. You could not even appeal legally. In the legislation. So that, you know, that just struck us as, why would you do that? Why would you, and then they tossed a bone and said, we're going to give, maybe, give up to $3 million into this new sanitary authority fund. Well, when you get in and read the legislation, you realize that's mostly phantom money. That money does not exist now. That money, when you read that legislation, is when they build the, oh, by the way, 925 houses that they are now going to be allowed to put in an F1, I believe just changed to F2, zoning, $1,500 per lot. At the time they actually took out a building permit would have to be paid. You think that will happen in our lifetime?
Yeah.
Right? So I'm just saying, with phantom money, so what affects you is obviously you could get bumped out of line for these, for the funds that you probably would be
revolving fund.
More than that now, your reputation as a council was directly dragged into this. I was at a meeting, there was another meeting this Friday, and there have been several meetings, and Linda Swearingen has stated that when people have said, who have you met with? Where did you have these meetings? What public officials? Lapine has been, she stated she met with Lapine counselors. So everybody up in Sun River, I can tell you, is ticked because they think, you know, you guys are back this bill that, oh, and I forgot one important little feature. All of this bill written to get Sun River LLC, Pine Forest, out of their covenants for Caldera, they also exempt themselves from the new sanitary district. They do not have to be in it. Everybody else does. So why would they do that, you have to ask yourself. Anyway, okay. You guys were directly implicated because, you know, they met with a couple of you. And so they're saying, when people have now slammed them, they're saying, you lied, you never had the meetings you've claimed you had. Who did you meet with? So you guys are being named as, you know, people that have met them. So everybody in Three Rivers South, et cetera, believes that Lapine counselors met with these people, and therefore, because nobody said anything or objected, that you concur with what was going on. So, and I believe, you know, so to me, that is the other reason it impacts you. You were directly implicated from the standpoint of having met with these okay. people. So.
Quickly?
Sure. Why not? Hello, I'm Vicki Jackson, 17346 Main Court. I'm sure you've read the articles in the Bend Bulletin. I actually live in, I would have to be forced to hook up to that so-called sanitary authority. Now, I've spoken to Gene Wisnett, and he said that Linda Swearingen was supposed to take care of all that outreach, and that he knew about the meeting afterwards, but he did not set up that meeting. So I don't think you guys have really been to CAG lately, but we're trying to figure out, because right now there's been one amendment, they took out the sanitary authority.
Purportedly.
We haven't seen it yet. Gene said there's a second amendment where apparently he's taking out some of the exemptions, but I haven't confirmed exactly what exemptions he's talking about. And see, Gene, back in the local rule days, he supported, you know, he was with us. But he hasn't come to the public. So I'm really concerned about this because I can't, you know, and then there's talk about maybe closing Vandervoort. I mean, it's going to be a nightmare. But it's all part of South County DEQ Steering Committee. And, of course, you probably heard about the VOCC rescinding the local rule. So it all ties in. So please take a look at this. It's really important. Thank you.
All right.
I'm not here speaking as a member of the steering committee, but the steering committee.
And you are?
I am Robert Gray, 17535 Holgate Court, outside Lapine. The steering committee is effectively cut off from commenting on this legislation because it is in process. They cannot discuss it. They were not informed of it until after the meeting with the city councilors. So I'm not sure who put you in that position where you have been given the appearance of approval, but somebody has, and it's disappointing. I would really be angry being put in that position. So somebody has said, put you in this position, has given the appearance that you approve of it, and it's a position that I would not want to be in. So I hope that you come to some decision where you either support or deny this allegation that you support HB 3347.
Real quick, I promise.
Okay.
Yeah, I can be real quick. Judy Forsyth, 52343 Hammond Way. I just want to follow up on what Robert shared, because I've been in three separate meetings with Steve Runner regarding this. And the talk of the town is that I totally support this. I have never voiced one word of support. But because I went to the meetings, that's how it's being perceived, and I'm not the only one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you. Any further comment? Okay, let's go back to a discussion around this. Adele?
Well, I would... for the reasons that I stated regarding how the city would be impacted by this legislation, I would urge the council to write a letter that we're not supporting the bill because of what it would do with in our position with the state, the clean, what is it, the Clean Water State Revolving Fund Program.
Dan, any comment?
Well, I think this is more of a county issue than a city issue. I can't see, I can't hardly make the connection, and I don't think the city should be getting involved in somebody else's business. If there's a private or district or somebody that's forming, and they have business to do or whatever, that could be happening. We want to oppose what other people are doing just to be, just in case we might need the money. I mean, I just don't get that. I really don't understand. And it sounds like more people have talked to this group outside the council than in the council, so I don't know why that means that council is having these conversations. They didn't come to the council. They might have talked to a couple counselors, but they did not come to the council.
No.
So there was no
council.
Yes.
But it's being
perceived.
Don't engage.
So I guess to me, I don't really get the connection with the City of La Pine and this project. I understand that you could, maybe there's some money we could use someday or something, but I just don't think it's, I don't understand it. I don't understand the bill or any of that. I don't understand hardly any of it. I do understand there's some concern, but I don't really still don't understand why after all this discussion.
Yeah. Don?
Well, I'll go on record of saying I never met with anybody on it, period. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that I did not get an email on it, because I get a lot of emails asking me to go to a lot of places, and there's only so many places that I can go. And if I did get an email on it, I just deleted it, forgot it. That's all I can say about it, thinking that I don't know anything about it. I do get the weekly email from our legislator on his activities, and I might go home because I print them out and I keep them, so I can go home and see what he says on those.
That we did receive an email, and it was asking the council to meet with Representative Jean Wisnett.
Are you talking about the meeting that was here?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize that until about halfway through this. I actually thought you guys must be talking about something else.
Yeah,
let me see this.
Well, this is my point exactly. This is why it needed to be an agenda item, so that we could have some time to research everything, just as you did, mm-hmm. instead of coming in here and just wham.
I think it serves a purpose, and hopefully.
Well, it is, because we've been discussing it for about an hour.
Good, because it's very important.
Yeah, but it should have been on the agenda, so that we all had the same information. I would have liked to have looked this up before tonight's meeting.
Me too.
I can answer you if I remember right. I think I'd have to go back and see if I had an email address, but I think Linda Swearingen called me and said, when was it? Was it January or January? So yeah, the session hadn't started yet, and said that she wanted to know if I could get some councilmen together to talk to Jean, and it was Jean. And I mean, I'm assuming she was coming and others. I mean, it didn't mean it had to be Jean only, but about some sort of septic system issue, something with Sun River, and that she was working for Sun River. You know, that's a. I mean, you can insert that on an issue a day. I mean, today I met with a bank manager from Sun River. I mean, you know, people call, and so you gather information, and so they wanted to meet with a couple people. And beyond that, I didn't know a thing about it. And then I couldn't even remember now who met. In fact, if I remember right, because I sat right here, I got up and down a bunch and was gone for most of it. I'm busy doing stuff. It just didn't register to me at all. There was no bill. There was no legislation here. They didn't have a copy of the bill. The bill hadn't even been they said it, there was no bill. I mean, it wasn't, maybe behind the scenes, that doesn't mean that she hasn't made one, but they had none to give us, if I remember right. So we had no bill, no bill had been introduced, the legislature wasn't in session. And, you know, for every bill that goes in, probably 50 of those kind of meetings go on. I mean, ahead of time, you know, they were here for a half hour or so. In fact, they didn't even say goodbye. I wasn't working on the computer, and I thought, well, one of them left. And, I mean, you know, and there was like some guy from Sun River, he was like the assistant manager or some facilities manager, and they were talking about Pine Forest, and
I was here too, and basically they said, this is for your information in case you hear something in the media, in the story.
And he didn't ask us for anything?
Well, I said, well, why are you meeting with the counselors of La Pointe? And then she said, well, you know, because you are stakeholders.
Yeah.
And so,
I didn't know that part of it. I just heard, for your information in case, since you're our neighbor, this is what's going on. And then I didn't, because there was no bill, I didn't know anything more about it until I think it was in the newspaper.
Can I make a quick comment, please?
Okay.
Bob Steffens, 52573. And this goes along with what, I guess a procedural comment, along with Councilman Stu is saying. It's really difficult to sit out here and see you guys, our council, struggle with something that it appears that most of you don't know anything about. It would be nice if you could take it offline and come back to us when people have a little bit more information.
Thank you for your input.
Yeah.
I guess at this point in time, I'd just like to query the council as to each one of us. I'm uncomfortable. I mean, just in the fact that I'm familiar with the bill from a couple of times I went to the CAG meetings, I had no knowledge. I never saw this email or anything like that. So I had no knowledge that there was some kind of meeting. And of course, I take exception to any time that we get referenced as having been a piece of something when it was nothing more than what I'm hearing right here, mm-hmm. a general conversation. I want to have the council speak to the point that, are we going to do something here this evening? I'm personally not prepared to do anything. I think it ought to go on the agenda. I understand the urgency of it, but that's me. So I'd like to move down the table.
I don't have enough information. This is the first time I've seen a bill, and it sounds like that's not even the full bill. It sounds like there's changes made. So I'm not. If we were going to make a decision about this, I might have to see it. I'd have to understand it, mm-hmm. have a lot more explanation, and then understand it even has anything to do with us. I mean, I understand that there's this this connection, but I don't think I understand nearly as much as everybody else here does. And I wasn't part of that meeting, I didn't know about it. My name's on an email, I must not have opened the email, because I don't know about it.
You said?
It was important that it's brought up. It's important that we, you know, as counselors, want to protect, you know, the city. And so we need to, you know, I would urge you to, you know, do the research and check out the facts that were stated here. And we can come at a later time and make a decision.
Okay.
But, you know, it has to be soon because this thing is emergency legislation.
Stu?
No, I agree. It does need attention, but there's a proper way to do it with information going to all the counselors so that everyone can come in and know what's going to happen at the meeting.
Yeah.
And just for everyone's record, yes, I was at that meeting, and it was the same as what Adele stated. It was a meeting that said June was going to be here, and we got here, and it was according to them, it was a representative of June's.
He said no.
I'm not engaging. This is council's time to talk. I'm sorry. And so that's what happened. And then all of a sudden, here we are discussing a bill that's been, there's changes made to it. So that's why I'm sorry, but that's why I had to object, because we didn't have any information in front of us. Yeah. And I'd like to have done some homework, and now I can.
Okay.
So I'm happy with this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Don?
Well, I'll tell you, I get so many emails about meetings, and like I say, there's a lot of times I'll come down and say, Rick, I'll print something out and say, Rick, is this important? Should I go to it or something like that? And it's just like tomorrow, I'm going to Maupin, for God's sake, for a meeting. And I went to a meeting last week also, plus the meetings that we've done too here. And it isn't that I try to avoid a meeting, that's important. However, there's a limit to how many I can go to. And myself personally, I'd like to have more information on this before I say, put my name to a vote. But for the record, I did not go to any meeting. I may have, and I did evidently receive an email on it, but I did not attend the meeting, okay?
My last comment is I think it's important. I think we should be up to speed on this, and I'm not at all in any way trying to not come to grips with it. I don't think any of us are. I think we're feeling that we need to have a little more information, and I think we now have a good presentation around it. So I'm in the same stance. Dan?
I'm like you, but we've had a lot of testimony from people that are opposed to this, but I haven't had the opportunity to have any testimony from anybody that's supporting it. So I, if we're going to deal with it in a way of hearing something or making a decision, I mean, I think it's fair to understand all sides of issues before we would do anything. And I don't know if I have time to go research it all. I'd like to hear the other side of it before we do anything.
Well, if I could, that's why if it's on the agenda, it's publicized and those folks are talking about it.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Then there's a consensus that we're going to go look into this, get ourselves up to speed, and put it on the agenda. Okay. Committee reports?
Can I, since we took up a lot of public comment with this issue, I had another.
Okay, comment. I'm sorry.
It'll be very short. I don't know if my eyelid can stay open that long.
Sorry.
Ted Scholler, 15640 Cornhill Drive. It was brought up in your agenda today about the ordinances, and sign ordinances was listed as a business owner. That concerns me. I know the city of Bend has gone through a lot of hassle on their sign ordinance. I was just wondering if it would be possible that the chamber could look at the proposed sign ordinance and have an opportunity to comment on it prior to its enactment or carrying through.
It's a public document.
Yeah, they're on the computer.
Oh, they're on the computer. Thank you.
Yeah. They may not be there yet, but okay. They will be.
Okay. Very good.
But it is a public document, so anybody can.
Okay. Great. So we can comment on. And this last issue, just a quick comment, is you might issue a statement that the council saw fit not to take a stand at this time so that we clarify the public record. Thank you.
Okay. Committee reports.
My report is too long. I'll wait till next time.
Okay. Any others? Then staff comment.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
You forgot me.
Yes, again. That's twice.
Gloria Sandy, Roy, Pawnee City Planning Commission. I just wanted to let you know that at our last planning commission, we did formally request that Deborah order materials and work up a budget. I don't know if that's been presented to you yet, but we are going to start a library, and it will be accessible to the city council also. And we'll be meeting next week.
Gloria, I'll tell you, that was in the consent agenda.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Staff comment?
Just to be brief, because I would have spent a few more minutes on it, but I'm going to, if everyone's okay with it, basically, I'm going to put out a kind of an RFP for someone to help us do our budget. We got a budget calendar here. Part of it's moral, part of it's time, part of it's we've spent money on folks. If you think about it, you know, we've got a good law firm that puts things together. We've had Deborah McMahon in here putting that together. If you took one element that is really very key to this new city, that we have a great bookkeeper who comes in a couple of today. She was here for longer because she was working on getting a new version of the program, but, you know, a couple hours every couple days, and then a volunteer budget person. That when he's showing me what he did, it's his. It's kind of like if someone made your computer and how you have created something. And everything has its own little quirks. You know, if you've got it, he's got like 15 Excel spreadsheets.
Yes, he does.
That all move around how, but they're not from a template. They're not from, they're how he...
It's his.
His. There's going to be someone after me. And one of the things we actually really need to do, and especially when you take this sewer and water coming, we need to begin spending some of the money we have. That's probably one of the last pieces, I would say, of building the city and the foundations. Actually getting, we need a system in place that employees can come and go, or staff can come and go, but the systems are beyond that.
Yep.
And I think we need a good base to start from. And so Ken's been very good and giving me and stuff and everything. But we're taking on a new building. How do you want to allocate that? How do you do all of it? And how do you set up? We want to get transit room tax separated. And I think that we need to get somebody in that's what they do for a living. And that they will set us up. Then the next phase would be, which I wouldn't include in this RFQ, the next phase is in looking at how to transition sewer and water in here. For billing software, how does it go? Will it work into our current QuickBooks, or is that not going to work? And then, even in the districts, auditing them, and then making sure we need to know that we're starting from zero. So everyone going forward knows, you know, if you have something bad, and you just keep moving it forward, it compounds. And we just need, we've never, you know, everything's worked, but we're going to a full audit next year, you know, and it's probably we need to do a little bit. So I have met with one of the large accounting firms in Bend. You can't have our current auditor, and, you know, they do a lot of this stuff. And so I'd like to put out an RFQ for something under $5,000 that, you know, may not would be what it would come to, would be my guess, that would help us build these templates for our budget that is hands down, and then we can set it up the way, you know, and maybe, and when we have our goal setting session, then we can kind of tailor it, decide how many funds we want, then July 1st move to what I would call almost all of next year. So really, you have a year and 3 months of accounting work to get everything set. You're going to have $1.2 million in cash coming across the counter. And we got to have a system in place, but we got to know what ours is first. And so,
okay.
So why would you go to an RFQ first?
RFP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, do it quicker, an RFP.
Okay.
And under our rules, if it's under $5,000, you know, it's pretty simple.
and I can just call and we'll put out a notice and call and ask for some quotes. There's only a few firms that really do it. You know, I've talked about individuals. The problem, if you get an individual, you're back to almost how they do it. Everybody does these things kind of in their own little way. And I think that you guys, over the 4 or 5 years, we went where we needed to go. We're getting rid of some things. We're getting a lot of things off our plate here. That's probably, I think, our next phase is we need to tighten up the whole money side of things and get our funds right, get things separated so we can track it and make sure it's a system that goes past Ken, goes past me, goes past whoever follows. So if you guys would basically give me consensus, I put that out like in the next 3 or 4 days, get it back in here, because we've got 3 or 4 months to work on our budget.
Dan?
Yeah, I only have one little question. You mentioned something about sewer and water. Are you just talking about an interface, or are you talking about the possibility of replacing? I didn't quite catch that.
Well, I'm not even talking about other than that we need to know. They have their system of accounting.
Okay.
We don't know if it all comes together when you come together.
But if we invest in something now, how do we know?
This is looking at what we do. Finding out what we have, how does it all add, and get it basically set up. Because the budget law is the same. The budget law is the same.
Sure.
Then the second phase would be to look at how they do utility billing and that stuff, and then see what... We can't accomplish that in the next 3 months, plus we have no authority to go do
that. That's just what my concern, I guess, was if we're looking at in a year or something doing water and sewer, is what we would do now going to work interface with that, or are we going to have to invest again to match it?
No, because you're going to get the system. The base system needs to be the base system. You just change the numbers. And it's the next phase is, and Steve Greer and something, whoever gets this can come down, I mean, and tell you. You're asking, I'm not an accountant. But we've had a volunteer come down and help us with our budget. And they've created a lot of accounts and funds and things, and we need to move.
I think it's important we do that.
There could be a little, but I think basically, Oregon budget law is Oregon budget law. And it's just getting the templates and all the things set up. You will just add more funds, and the numbers will be different.
Okay. The sewer and water, I think I recall in one of the meetings, they just invested in a big software system or something.
Yeah, but you don't know. I have no idea. They gave me the name of it today, but we don't know if it fits into anything we have.
Yeah, okay.
But one's accounting and one's kind of budget.
Yeah.
And they both have to talk.
Yeah.
But we need to know what we're doing with our budget and what have we done over 4 years. Get it right, yeah. Then I can go from there.
Okay.
So are we talking software and an accountant, because you already got the software?
You're making the answer to the question we had. I just know hers is the bookkeeping side. There's the bookkeeping side and how the
okay, so what was the presentation we sat here?
Oh, that would come in phase two. That isn't it. That's okay. That's your...
Okay, thank you.
And you still have to take that stuff and put it into the LB-10s, the LB-20s, the LB-30s. So, but I'm going to say the budget next year, I'll put in $30,000-$40,000 for accounting type stuff, software and everything. It's something we're going to have to do. Now, sewer districts, we can help because it's for them, you know. And I talked to them today and said, you need to put some money in maybe for next year's budget, because they want to know what I thought they should put in the budget for next year. And I said, put some accounting money possibly to help with that. That's a discussion for...
Like a little further.
Yeah. Let last night settle.
Don?
I pretty much think that it's pretty much a set format. It's just a matter of getting things put in place, and I think we ought to go ahead and move on it as quickly as we can.
I agree totally, and I understand exactly what you're talking about, so I think we have consensus for you to move
forward. So I may have someone, in 2 weeks, I may have something here, because we do kind of have to move so that we can get it going.
Right.
So
okay.
Thank you for that, I appreciate it. Yeah. Then I can work on TRT and some of these other things.
Okay. Any other staff comments? Council?
I commented enough.
Done.
I'm ready to go home.
Okay. Therefore, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Make that motion.
Second.
Third. I'm a four-year.
Don doesn't want the motion.
Did you hear that?
I'm a